Hey friends, it's your old pal Merlin here. I just want to give you a heads up. This episode of Due by Friday includes discussion of dysphoria, dysmorphia, self-harm, and suicide. So if you think the episode might bum you out or you're not in a good place to listen to it right now, you know, you might want to skip it, come back later. Just want to give you a heads up. And, you know, spoiler alert, you know, Alexandra's fine and no one is in trouble. So, you know, on with the merriment. We love you.
This is Due by Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann and Alex Cox. This week's challenge, harness your horses.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello. How are you? Oh, I'm in the dock. Oh, you prepared so much.
Did I?
Yes, you know what? That was a bad assumption for me to make. I apologize.
No.
You did a lot of pasting, I think.
Hello? Hello? Good morning.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
Velocity. Good morning.
Velocity. Webster's defines velocity.
I still just sometimes hear viscosity and I'm like, ooh.
Viscosity, I first heard as a word, I first heard it used in a TV commercial, I want to say for Pennzoil, some kind of motor oil. So viscosity is like how slippery something is.
Oh, I thought it was like how
viscous
speed, or it like I thought it was like the speed at which something dripped.
Are you talking about like that, like the pond, like the tar in the cave, that kind of thing? Am I thinking of Play-Doh? What am I thinking of?
I don't know. The state of being thick, sticky, and semi-fluid in consistency due to internal friction. Basically, I'm talking about think about cum a lot of times when someone says velocity.
That would be that's external friction, usually.
Well, I mean, to each their own.
They call it a fifi bag. Did you know that? You know you can make a masturbator out of a milk carton?
I mean, can't you make almost anything into a masturbator if you really try?
If you're hungry enough, everything's food. Yeah, but like if you've enjoyed your prison toilet wine, you're ready to unwind a little bit. Yeah. How you doing?
Oh, I mean, should we get into it? Do you want goodness, hold on. I'm great.
You want to bring people up to speed? Bring me up to speed.
Sure.
I said this to my family. First of all, my family says my wife and I were corrected on your pronouns twice this morning in 2 minutes. You know what I realized today? I realized that my problem with they, it's so deep set in my brain as a part-time English major.
Mm-hmm. I used to be that person who was like, it just doesn't sound right grammatically.
Well, it doesn't. And sometimes I code switch. And if I want to actually tell an anecdote to my wife alone in the room, sometimes I code switch and I say, listen, I'm going to, you know, it's important to call people what they want, but just so I can say this as a paragraph, I'm going to use the old words.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, okay. Yeah.
But just because you know what I realized though, I realize it's a little bit like the way British people drop the article on things like hospital and university.
And then they add an S to something. Ooh.
What, like maths?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense, though. That's just short for mathematics. I think that kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But it's like, you know, it's like you're, when you have to stop, and maybe this is the point, when you have to stop to think about the words that you're saying, like I'm doing right now, it's like trying to eat while you talk about your tongue. Like it's just not, it's not a great idea. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, I bring greetings to you from the other two humanoids in my house. And they say hello, and Madeline said, "How's she doing?" And before the phrase could get out, Emma, not looking up from her phone, just intones they.
they.
Because she has a lot of days in her life.
I mean, I assume
several of her extremely good peers are they.
Mm-hmm.
So, also.
There's a bit of a moral panic around them, which I just
save it for the show. Yeah.
Oh, save it.
They kids. But but the point being, I said, I don't know. I said, and here's the thing. I said, I'm trying to be the Alex in the world that I'd like to change. I admonished our listeners lovingly with so much affection. I said, hey, look, when Alexandra is on their brain break, we're telling you right now, we're putting a stake in the ground that there may be times when, you know, just whatever, you know, it's brain break time. And we may not have an episode sometimes and things like that. Right. And I said, please, unless Alex says otherwise, let's give Alex some room, you know, and don't make me the penis lawyer. And so anyway, and I said, I don't know. I'm going to find out. I said, but I wanted to be the change. So I did not intone you and your family to get updates. But, you know, do you want to bring us up to speed?
Sure. First, I want to say that I tweeted and I asked, hey, people are asking me where the episode is last week. If you're here the first time, buckle in, buddy.
Where were they tweeting? Where were they tweeting? Where were they tweeting to, Alex?
Just nice. Just like, hey, where's the show?
So you gaslit me. You gaslit me. So
how did I guess? Okay.
Well, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Okay. You did. I went and I was going to try and see if there's any updates I could find, and you're not going to believe what I found. Mm-hmm. And then somebody had been disappeared. And then I, this morning, thought, oh, there's no chance in the world that the disappearing has been undisappeared. Lo and behold, guess who's back? Bitches. Wild card.
What the heck are you talking about? Did I?
You deleted your Twitter, didn't you?
Oh, I just did the deactivation thing for a bit because I'm the okay. So
you do double gaslit me? I'm double gaslit.
Let's do a zip, 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 zip.
Jazz girl. I'm glad you're back. I missed you. I love you very much.
I love you too. And I can't say it. I can't end the meeting.
Stupid face. You have a stupid face.
I'm just gonna. I'm like, hey, let's just tweet that I am babysitting my niece, which was true at the time.
That image was hilarious. You put an emoji face on her.
Yes. Well, I don't know. It's not my baby. I don't know if they are putting you're right.
Don't misgender the baby.
I meant by they, I meant her parents. She can decide her pronouns at the day. Whenever she wants,
who knows what kind of pronouns we'll have by then.
Yeah, exactly. There's gonna be like, as Biden said, what, at least two.
Yeah, right. Sure.
That was pretty cute. So she can just hold two iPhones with her little baby hands, and okay, like her 14-month-old hands or whatever.
Her little ravioli hands.
I'm like, how the fuck are you even doing this? But I didn't say that because I would never swear in front of a child.
No.
Unfortunately, my second niece, who is fine now, yay, hooray, was...
Oh my God, so cute. Did you tell the listeners about this? Is that okay to say that?
Oh yeah, we can now. I just didn't want to...
Yeah, no, I understand. Believe me, I understand. But you had a new addition to the greater family.
Yeah, and it was just really... I have another niece,
new
and
baby.
It was...
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, she's just the... I'm a second-time uncle.
She's so little and pink.
Oh, then so little.
I got a photo. Matchy always knows. Somehow Matchy knows. And I always get the right thing at the right time. And I got a picture of the new baby. And I got another picture of Winston, the bulldog.
Oh, I love Winston.
Winston is a precious angel. And that's the only dog that doesn't like Matchy. Is that right?
No, he doesn't like... No, that's not it. But it has been said that he doesn't like men. And so,
oh no, that's complicated.
The owners were just so surprised.
How does he know whether to hate you guys?
Yep. And so, yeah, he has been outed by dogs before, but it's really
doggy doggy what now?
Talk about a crossover episode. Oh boy.
Going on, we haven't gotten to robots. We have so much robot content this week.
I that's what I was so surprised by.
Did you pop a boner when you saw the images?
I opened the doc and I'm like, oh, so many robots. I don't even know what we're gonna get to shoot today. Oh, and anyway, new Izzy is her name. She was in, unfortunately,
Izzy?
The NICU for a week.
Isn't that a Grey's character?
I think you're right.
That's the lady, Catherine Heigl, isn't Izzy?
Is Oh, that's right. Oh, don't associate. Oh, don't. I don't.
Hang
want
on.
Her to be
hang
associated
on. I did. You know what? I'm sorry. I'm interrupting you by design. I did it again today. I even on the day that Harvey Weinstein is extradited to L.A. for more charges on being a gross human being. I said, you know, there's that thing they used to say. I told you this story.
Small thing.
Well, they used to say, Katherine Heigl, I heard she's hard to work with. And I said one time to my daughter's mother, I said, you know, I heard Katherine Heigl's hard to work with. And she said, you know what? Isn't it interesting that that's the thing they end up saying about a lot of women and only women? Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? You're right. Bad on me. And today I said, hey, Katherine Heigl, I heard she's hard to work with. And she said, I said, her quote unquote chemistry with George, and we're watching the good season, is when I think they have the least chemistry of any romantic couple I've ever seen in the world and in a production. And of course he's a gay man and she's Katherine Heigl in real life. But, and then, you know, we know what my daughter's mother said again, you know what she did this time? She said, you know what? Actually, they're really good friends in real life. And she was super nice to George in real life when the guy with the CGP gray glasses was being mean to George. Did you know that? Did you know that Katherine Heigl was very supportive of George in real life?
Yes, because notice I did not say don't associate her with Katherine Heigl. I said don't associate her with Izzy because Izzy, the character, is a real bitch. And I don't think I'm supposed to say that anymore because I'm a they.
Isn't it interesting? Characters, they always say characters that are hard to work with. Yeah. Everyone's so emotional on that show. They're very emotional.
Oh yeah. My cat's daddy mother loves to watch that show for comfort. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? But then I watch Attack on Titan now for comfort, which is show literally. Watch Attack on Titan, everybody. It's good.
I had a breakthrough headcanon moment today that I think is going to be very helpful to my enjoyment. And like I say, we're watching the good season. It's an outlier season. It's like season 4 of Sunny. It's one of those like, oh man, there's some bangers in this one. But what I realized was, so Karev is sitting around and he's just standing there and there's this woman, this red-haired woman, because they love a red-haired woman on that show. Thank God. But anyway, it's a red-haired woman. I think she's had face reconstruction and Karev is just standing around in her room talking to her. And her room is like a studio apartment. She has this room, this giant, giant room, and she doesn't want to leave the hospital. And I said, I wouldn't want to leave the hospital.
I wouldn't want to leave it.
Exactly. I don't know if you remember this, but she not only has a private room, but I mean, there you wish your aunt in the cheap nursing home had a place this nice. It's super nice. And Karev's just standing around. I'm like, first of all, okay, everybody on the show, they're way too emotional. Here's the other thing with Karev, though. Karev just seems to stand around and talk to people a lot, but I had a breakthrough in headcanon today. Can I share it with you?
Please do.
What if Karev dresses like a TV doctor, but he's actually on security and he's just there to stand around until somebody needs to get punched in the face?
Oh,
he's a doctor secondarily, but he's primarily like a Hulk out enforcer of his own design.
Oh my gosh.
Kind of makes more sense.
My head canon. Well, and especially because he goes and works in peds and,
yes,
and especially now, I would love it if there was like a big old, not a cop, but just someone who is going to be around there to punch anybody who comes in.
It also just, though, opens, we should say this for the after show, but it also opens the door, fight
for the babies.
Teeth. It also, I think, brings up an interesting idea, which is what if Seattle Grace, which is what it was known as at the time, what if Seattle Grace actually...
We don't say that anymore.
Mm. Oh, I'm sorry. We have Neo titles.
I'm sorry.
And what is it now? Now it's Gray Memorial, Gray. It's also the one where the drunk dad comes in and yells at her. And Meredith gets very emotional.
The name changes like 6 times.
They got to take the test, and she might have to do her whole resident year over again because she's not doing good on the test. But that opens the door, and I'll save this for the after show. I want you to tell me about the after show in a minute, but we'll save it for the after show. But it's my feeling, what if unless this particular hospital actually has a very unusual approach. And there actually are different departments that aren't the department you've seen. Yeah, yeah, we call them a resident, but they actually do different things. Like maybe some people are just there to be mopey. Like who knows? I'm just tossing it open that if we go into the world, if we load the head cannon and fire it off, will it turn out that everybody there, only a few of them are doctors? I think Bailey's definitely a doctor. This is back when she was very little and had a bad wig.
Oh, gosh. She was so... They actually addressed that. It was super cool. All right, I'm going to put the woke hat on. But at one point, they started like talking about Black women's hair. And like it's a beautiful bonding moment later on. And of course, you know, I mean, they're like, oh, my God, I can't believe they did that. Also,
all they need now is another Black woman.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. You can never have...
Oh, come on. No, that's not me. That was me doing a bit. Sorry, I should have put the
antlers
on. Oh,
sorry. The bit.
Here's
my bit. I wanted to touch their hair, but don't you like love Maggie though? Jokes about the room, as you said, Maggie is the heart doctor who comes eventually and is maybe related to a character.
Oh, is she the one who's really over the top? She's very, is that the one who's like super excited all the time? Curly hair. I might be getting confused.
So.
We're on the good season.
Oh yeah. She's a good character in a bad season. You know?
Yeah. And like Friday Night Lights isn't there yet. I like Friday Night Lights. The African-American guy. I like him a lot. He's the guy who was the running back on Friday Night Lights, and he's on that show as well.
Does it get better after the second season involving what I can only describe as a true crime-ish element, except it's not true? Like, what the fuck was that?
They really do drag some stuff out. As I mentioned to John Roderick on Monday, we just saw the episode with the ferry accident, and boy, does that ever get dragged out. It's almost a regular airplane crash. You know, it just kind of goes on and on. But I feel like... I don't know. I have a lot of crushes on people on that show. I have a lot of crushes.
Oh, see, I was asking about Saturday Night, or Saturday, good Lord, Saturday Night Friday
Fever?
Night Lives.
Oh, no, that crow. You mean the season?
The second Crystal Skull season?
The second season that we don't
acknowledge? Yes, that's such a good way of putting it. Yeah.
With Landry and Mockingbird on the bridge. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Adrian Palicki, I believe her name is. She's very good in John Wick. She's very good as Mockingbird on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We missed an episode last week. Somebody in Alex's family had an Izzy. They did or did not go off Twitter and did or did not come back. But, you know, like Elaine Stritch says, you know, I made it through all of last year and I'm here.
All right. Let's get into the...
What a week.
Wait, hold on. What a week. I can update you and in turn update other folks, except now I am logging into... Did I bring Twitter? Oh, yeah, I guess I...
No, I saw it this morning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I got a double gaslight.
Did I tweet any...
No.
Okay, that was pretty funny. That was a good tweet. Come on, that should have done more numbers. Come on. Did you see my tweet? Did you see
I see a Pokemon.
No.
Oh, you mean Kyle? Is that Kyle? Who is that? What's his name?
Kyle. I quote tweeted someone who said, "Tech bros will write building something new, hush emoji, in their bio, but it's just Kyle in another note-taking app."
And then you see Kyle type in, and he's got a gamer hat. But then I think that you made Greg feel bad. Greg responded to that. I think you made him feel bad. Greg said, oh, no. Greg, I'm my favorite.
Oh, no. That's I hearted that as well, but I'm actually insulted by his comment on his application Draft's behalf, because calling Drafts a note taking app is calling an iPad a big iPhone. Like how dare you, sir?
Well, it's like calling paper a dead tree affordance.
Yes. How dare you?
It's kind of a lot more stuff you can actually do, you know, with it. Make a house, or you can make a newspaper, or you know.
Imagine someone being self deprecating. Oh boy. Oh man.
In this economy?
I guess I'm on Twitter.
I missed you. I'm glad you're back.
Oh, well, no, that's the idea.
I haven't talked to you. I've been leaving you. God damn it, Alexandra. I've been leaving you alone. I've been staying out. I've been staying out of your shit. I'm sitting here with my Kyle in my hand, you know, and wondering what's going on. And I miss you. I like the program that we do.
Should I take the jazz then? And because you are doing the thing, you are creating puzzles for people. I don't want to create puzzles for people. If I didn't want to talk about things, I wouldn't.
No, I'm not creating puzzles. I just bought a puzzle, dumped it on the table.
What kind?
Showed the, oh, it's a coin. My mom once did a 500 piece puzzle of a coin. I want you to think about that for a minute.
Oh my God.
It's like a Liberty dollar. So like, yeah, there's little bits, there's smudges and stuff, and there's edges and things. But like, can you imagine making a puzzle of a coin, doing that on purpose? I hate puzzles.
Well then you're not gonna like this. I literally wrote this down this morning. Oh my goodness gracious.
Oh, everybody sit down. Alex has something to announce to the class.
Wait, no, hold on. Wait, no, this is
I thought you had a prepared statement. Do you have an opening remark? Are you gonna give us a Santa Cusa?
No, wait, this is very important because you incepted me a little bit, because as you know, I now do the note cards.
My wife got incepted 2 nights ago. My wife got incepted. Did I tell you about this? No, I didn't.
No,
she had a dream in a dream. She had a dream in a dream.
Like a lucid dream?
No. She was in the dream, and it was the most mundane dream of all time. In the dream, she was really tired and went to sleep and then had a dream.
Oh,
that's somebody who's not getting
those.
Enough sleep. That's not
and it's true, because I thought, oh, that's a normal thing that happens all the time, right?
No, sure. No. Oh yeah, all the time. You kidding me?
Yeah. You wake up and you're like, oh man, and then you realize you're having like a night terror, and it's the second time. Oh yeah, no. I wrote NFC puzzle on a note card this morning.
Oh, that's a pretty one. Is that a New Zealand card? That's a really nice card. That's a system card. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yes. And I've this morning my NFC, to be fair, I haven't used it for like 2 weeks, but my podcast setup NFC sticker did not work this morning. And I was like, oh man, I wonder if they wear out. Huh. But anyway, I was like, ooh, I want to.
I don't think they get much of get or receive much of a signal. I just feel like they don't hear well. I don't mean to be ableist, but I feel like they're not listening. I don't know if they're hearing, but they're not listening.
I don't think the NFC community is going to be upset. I think I'm part of the NFC. Goddamn.
NFC community works at least 10% of the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So do you have a prepared statement?
Oh my goodness.
You take, you know, in your own time, take your time. I this is my day. This is my entire day.
I do want to get into it. Would you be opposed to at the very beginning of the episode being like, hey, you're not in trouble? And we have done this a couple times before, like, hey, you're not in trouble. We just, you know, as we do, talk about mental illness stuff, and it might not be your jam today or something like that.
Oh yeah. I started watching American Horror Story last night.
Which season?
I started at the beginning, Murder House. I've never seen the show. I'm interested in the idea of Ryan Murphy, and I'd heard things about this show. And oh my God, it's such a good bad show. But it's right in my wheelhouse for, oh, it's 11. I think I got another hour or so in me. Holy shit. And I went through a bunch of episodes. And again, speaking of Friday Night Lights, it's got Mrs. Coach in it. It's got the guy whose name I always confuse with everybody else. It's not Dylan McMurphy, whatever that guy. Dermot Mulroney. It's got him, and they had you know, my daughter and I at the beginning, we always like to see, we call them tags. At the beginning, you see the pop up, and it's like, this episode of Invincible has, or this episode of The Boys has gore and violence and language, whatever that means. I hope almost all shows that aren't silent have language, but this one had so many tags, including some TW type stuff. I am absolutely not opposed to that. There was so much of the things that I'm not even TW'd about, but woof. Like when Quicksilver walks in and she's, oh man, woof. Anyway, yes.
Oh yeah. I haven't seen the first season in a very long time, but.
You know who else is on there? In flashbacks, really good flashbacks, fucking Gavin Belson. Gavin Belson is the doctor who built the house in the 20s for his wife, and in 1926 things got a little bit hairy.
Is this the season where there's no Sarah Paulson?
I have not seen a Paulson yet. I believe I shotgunned at least 4 last night. I've seen her in the credits. I've always heard this is a very, like, I mean, I'm using these
it's
words.
It's a Buffy first season.
I'm enjoying it, but like, I don't mean to be putting these right next to each other, but I'd heard that it's got a queer sensibility, that it's kind of kinky, that it's kind of like, that there's, yeah, but it's also, it's almost like a Stranger Things level of like, oh my God, classic tropes of Stephen King and, you know, and Stanley Kubrick and stuff like that. But I think that's totally fine. So at the top of the show, we'll do a very tasteful warning that we're going to talk about brains.
Tasteful, yeah. Yeah.
Will there be any calorie counting? Are we going to talk about calorie counting?
Oh, I don't think so. But there.
We're going to talk about pee hacking.
I'm trying to pee hack. Oh, like with the sticks. Oh, did you listen to the keto episode of?
Oh yeah.
Welcome to Dubai Friday, where we talk about podcasts we like.
The very latest one is, which I just finished this morning, is I don't know. Sometimes I get a little fast and loose. I don't think of it as a science show. I think of it as a hanging out with friends show. They get a little fast and loose, but it's about and lately they've gotten a little bit. They're sniffing their own farts a little bit, but I still enjoy it. But the this one was about. The researcher, you ever heard, okay, Alexandra, have you ever heard, because in a different life, you have been a woman person and you're always getting bugged about food and like, yes. Oh, if you want to lose weight, you got to eat less. If you want to eat less, you know what you do? What do? Smaller plate. This is that guy. This is that guy. And I don't want to spoil it for you, but all the way. And it's, there's so much shit in this episode that hits, especially, oh God, Michael and Audrey.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Presses a ton of both of their buttons, but especially Audrey's, because it's like institutional health programs, stuff for like Google wanted to do a thing that when you check out at the cafeteria, they'd show you an AI simulated photo of what you'd look like in a year if you kept eating that same food.
Oh, yikes. That's a bit, ooh.
Yeah, you're going to like this. You're going to like this episode. But yeah, they always mention calorie counting. Is that a huge thing in the... in the community of disordered eating survivors? I didn't know that was a thing until this show.
I think so. I mean, well, and that's...
We're talking about any of that tracking stuff, I guess, is like, I didn't know that was a thing, like a trigger thing. And now I've done it here.
Oh, in terms of, yes. Oh, well, we'll put it at the...
I might as well be talking about the nightman.
Well, the I was really nervous when they talked about keto, because I have done/still often do a very light keto, which is always why I send you pictures of when I...
I did Atkins and it changed my life, and I had the sticks on the toilet. I'd pee on it to see if I'd ketoed.
And it was one of those things where there are some like turns out things, but like the biggest turns out is one, obviously, whenever you diet, go do stuff with it, your doctor. And two, it's like, yeah, if you really want to do keto,
act like it's about health. Let's do that. Exactly. Let's act like this is related to your health.
Yes, yes. Right. And then
it's not like deciding on a t-shirt.
Well, and
or a tattoo.
It is. It is like a tattoo. It's really hard to do keto unless you just like eating the same thing over and over and over, which, surprise, that's exactly in my wheelhouse.
Oh, dude, Atkins diet. Let me get this straight. Atkins diet, which, of course, is not healthy. But Atkins diet, let me get this straight. So, like, if I don't eat potatoes, I can have all the steak and bacon that I want. Like, don't throw me in the briar patch, please and thank you. Jeez, yes, no problem. I missed French fries. I mainly missed French fries, I remember.
That's one thing I also really like about that show is the distinction between dieting and diet, that right. The noun.
It's almost like weather versus climate.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. Yes, yes, yes. And I...
almost like diet as a noun versus diet as a verb. Like diet is a verb, you know, voi contrati, like be careful about that. But, you know, what is your noun diet? Mm-hmm. Because that's your climate, really. Part of your climate.
I just don't eat now we're just going to talk about Alex's food. Hopefully I don't have disordered eating. I mean, I've...
Disordered eating? It's really hard to say. Disordered eating.
Disordered eating.
Pancake by drunk dump truck driver.
Pied Piper, middle out
compression.
What is it that they say? Pied Piper proprietary... So I don't know. It's the worst alliteration.
What if I told you that there was an app where I could see your children anywhere? There's nothing you could do about it.
Oh, welcome to Dubai Friday.
What if I could find you a playground with the most or fewest children?
You haven't said to me twice. I'd restarted watching Silicon Valley and Silicon Valley.
Silicon season two. I did season two in a day. A couple of days later, I kept watching. I had a power puttering day on Sunday, and then I thought I had COVID on Monday, and so.
Oh,
I, and,
that's right. Oh,
did you
God.
Hear that? Did you hear I thought I had COVID?
I think yeah.
I mentioned it on the back to work program, I think.
Oh God.
I was scared. I was actually legit scared. I have an appointment tomorrow morning to get a test that I'll probably go ahead and cancel, but then I got through. So season two, my God, so good. But then anyway, Gavin Belson, who also plays Augie in The Aviator. Were you aware of that?
Oh,
were
yeah.
you aware were you aware that he's the airplane mechanic in The Aviator?
I mean, I wasn't. Well, now I am aware.
Also, Russ Hanneman was the cameraman in the very ill-advised Now We Meet the People Who Are Shooting the Office documentary part of The Office from that terrible season. He's the cameraman that Pam kind of almost gets with. Remember that? Russ Hanneman?
Oh, I know. I hated him.
Trace
I
Comas.
Hate, Trace Comas. Well, actually, it was the sound guy. But
sound guy. Enough. Oh, sorry. Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm,
I stand
yeah,
corrected. Mm-hmm. Trigger warning. Alex.
Yeah. but the other thing last week is I really hesitate to use the term nervous breakdown because so many things come along with that. But I'll, in terms of like, how,
it's like declaring yourself hysterical. It's
right.
Like, there's a lot of valence to these words.
The only reason I say that
my uterus made me crazy.
yeah. But
the Greeks have a word for this. It's called being a woman.
Oh gosh, I mean, well, now thanks to Bo Burnham's Inside, most everyone who's watched it knows about dissociative episodes, and which is different than DID, which we used to call multiple personality disorder. But anyway, last week I was in a situation where really thought Maddie and I thought like, okay, Alex's brain is broken to the point where we might go into the hospital. Not because I wanted to hurt myself or others.
Did you just kind of wake up and know that it was kind of a bad time?
No, it was real bad, and it's to the point where I, in terms of like disassociation, I really don't remember what I was doing or saying, but apparently some of the stuff, and I was absolutely terrified and was like looking through my texts of, did I yell at any of my friends or treat any of my friends the way I did Matchy and the founder of Cox's best friend since high school, Kara, and both of those have been on the receiving end of what is a manic episode in terms of just like my pure irrational fury and cruelty. And what I mean by that is this is not, you know, your mileage may vary when you have a manic episode, but this is something I know that a lot of people can do without having any sort of mental break, but I think it is easiest and most painful when you hurt somebody that you're close to, because you know exactly where the like chinks in the that armor is, and you know exactly what to say to just tear that person apart.
Especially like when you're unintentionally inhabiting a certain kind of terrible character, like however that started, like that's who you're being now, and that's not maybe an aspect of who you are, but that's not the who you'd ever want to be.
Yeah, and this is not a Martha situation where I pretend to be like mean to men over the phone. It's also, I think, at least for me, whenever I have a manic episode, I lash out at the people I'm closest to also because I know that they won't leave, will not abandon me in my time of need.
Whenever my kids being a dick, I of course think about, well, I'm a dick all the time, but I think about the fact that she's a teenager, and like, it's, you know, I have a hypothesis that especially with kids, but really for everybody, sometimes there is a pipes and wires thing that's going on that you could call a feeling. And that feeling needs a reason, or that feeling, it needs an outlet, or will find an outlet. Like, you wouldn't want it to, but even if it is often totally irrational. And like a small example of that would be, you want mac and cheese? No, I hate mac and cheese. I've never liked mac and cheese. Now, I know factually that, as far as I can tell, based on the evidence, my kid actually does actually really like mac and cheese, like any normal person. But that strong feeling, that strong negative feeling, needs to burst out somewhere. Do you know what I mean? And like you end up, but like you're rehearsing life. When you're a kid and you're being a dick with your parents, totally understandable, like totally understandable. But you do that because it's a safe environment. It's a low stakes environment for you to be an asshole, where you maybe don't want to do that with the school bully.
Yeah. And that gets, like you said, when it is a kid and a parent, and or occasionally, you know, if you yell at your spouse or something, it is not good, but it doesn't necessarily become a toxic relationship or something like that. We should talk about the book, What Happens When You Overstate Harm, because that's a good book.
Oh my God. Yeah, I've been reading that on your suggestion. Yeah, absolutely. But like, it's also like, you know, I mean, depending on your background and how you are, I mean, as somebody who's the way that I am, as emotionally fragile as I've been for most of my life, like there are things where like in a certain kind of, I can think of certain ethnicities where people just kind of yell at each other all the time, but it's not meant in a harmful, permanently harmful way. Whereas there are families where one outburst, one wrong night at the wrong time ends up having an impact on that relationship for months or years or decades. I'll note that one time you made me feel scared and insecure and vulnerable, like that ends up being almost like a kind of like shameful PTSD. And like, but you don't want to do that to a Kara, but.
And this is why I want to have the little, you know, content warning at the beginning, because there was a time in my life, now speaking of Bo Burnham, like exactly 14 years ago, where I was at a point where I did not want to be alive anymore. And 16-year-old Kara was in her closet talking me down from doing terrible things. And I know a lot of friends have that have, like, you know, literally saved their friends' lives. But that isn't something you should have to do when you are 16 years old, especially when, you know, you're all alone and you don't want to, you know, tell any, which is why I'm so lucky to still have her around, because again, I'm going to say luckily a lot because this isn't a prepared statement. Both Maddie and Kara knew, like, right away, okay, this is not behavior that we've seen in a long, 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 long time. And I'm not, like, trying to be vague about, like, what I mean to say by behavior. It was just like, fuck off. I never want to talk to you, see you, anything like that. And I wish that I had a trigger. I wish that I could say that there was something that I could pinpoint, but there is always a reason for these things. And sometimes the reason is your brain chemistry. So that sucks.
And it sounds like something somewhere, somehow that sets it off.
Yeah. And again, some of it I remember because it was over text messages. And I don't remember deactivating my Twitter account, but that makes total sense to me now, because
I had mixed feelings. Because on the one hand, I was like, that's the best thing Alex could do.
But, yeah. You
know, I was like, oh, huh.
Well, no, I don't want to say anything crazy to 8,000 people.
I know. But it doesn't make you happy, you know?
And I was surprised at how many people noticed, especially because I did not remember this. And I was like, well, I guess that is good. Thank you, you know, friends who reached out. Thank you so much. Anyway, this is a long, rambly way of saying Tuesday, it was just to the point where I was having this manic break, and Maddie was like, okay, clearly this stress leave isn't working the way that you wanted or we wanted, which is why I was actually going to break up with my psychiatrist, but I ended up doing that because
Oh, interesting. That had not occurred to me. You said last time we recorded that you sort of voce, sort of stage whispery, you were like thinking about making a change there. And this is what it caused that. You felt like it wasn't you. Did you feel at the time when you were feeling copus, did you feel like it was it just matchy, or did you also feel like this wasn't working the way you hoped or wished?
It was both of us. Like, it's hard to when you spend the majority of your life wondering like if queerness is even a real thing that exists, or if it's just part of your brain not having enough or too much serotonin or dopamine or whatever, and it's like, all right, am I really a non-binary person? Is this even really a thing? Is this true? And obviously the answer is yes, but when that gets,
you start doubting your own perceptions, or
yeah. Well, once you just start doubting yourself, and it's very much unfortunately a thing in the trans community. It's like, well, you're not trans enough. You don't present androgynous enough. And right now it's like, oh, it is just a fad. Despite, you know, I've used they, them pronouns for everybody calm down. Not a very long time. Privately for a very long time with very small amount of people. It's new for most people. It's okay, everybody. And that just gets muddled in with like, is my queerness just part of my bipolarness? And those are two distinct things, but that doesn't mean that, I don't think I've ever talked about dysphoria on this show, because I don't want to steal two-headed girl valor. My spouse has a podcast. Everybody, you should go listen to it. But do you know what dysphoria is? Should I explain that real quick?
I wish you would. I get dysphoria and dysmorphia confused. Mixed. I remember hearing that Michael Jackson, it was believed from a long-distance diagnosis, that Michael Jackson... one reason that he chose to keep doing different kinds of procedures and surgeries, it wasn't that, as we speculated at the time, that he wanted to be white, but that the thing, and I feel like this is somehow related to anorexia, but like the person that see in the mirror in real life and metaphorically, that like you don't look like, just tell me what it is. I feel like it's this thing of like, where you have a distorted idea of how you look or who you are that becomes somewhat unshakable.
Right. And actually, you're right as well that sometimes dysmorphia comes along with disordered eating, or it's one of those things where it is often a symptom of something. And a lot of straight and cis people have body dysmorphia in terms of just being unable to see their body as it objectively is in the world. And that is an oversimplification, but the difference between that and dysphoria is that dysphoria is more rooted around the gendered parts of your body. And those are also the parts, again, oversimplification, but it's like, yes, I have this thing in my pants, and as a lady, I shouldn't have this thing in my pants. I want it gone. Or me, like, I don't want these things on my chest. Always been really, really bad. But before we had a word for dysphoria, you know, that had always been buried because I was focusing on being bipolar, which is a good thing, focusing on mental health. And I just always assumed that I never had what's called social dysphoria, as in being around other folks and being very aware that you look like something, probably gender, that you are not. And I had never experienced that before. I truly don't think I'd ever experienced that before.
So it's almost like a form of cognitive dissonance, like in the sense of like, I remember first hearing about cognitive dissonance, I think, and that's such a fascinating idea. At least my understanding of that was that the things that you feel very deeply, or just something that is absolutely like in your bones as truth in the universe, is at odds with a more empirical reality, and that the dissonance comes from the inability to have those two square up, and that is a cause of tremendous stress because, you know, it's like Wolverine's body is always healing, right? They stripped him down to the bones to put the adamantium on. So he's in pain all the time because but he can't heal. Anyway, that's how I use Marvel Comics to understand.
That's exactly that is more dysmorphia. And that's why often dysphoria and dysmorphia can go hand in hand, because dysphoria, like sometimes it's like, yes, other folks can see the tits and read you as a woman when you're not that, and that is just a thing. Whereas dysmorphia can be like you said, it's just always just tearing at your insides with that that adamantium. And I never in terms of like social dysphoria, I never really focused on that because I was too busy. The reason I've been awesome at quarantine basically is because I felt for the first time, and we've talked about this on earlier shows, I felt for the first time physical dysphoria, which is being like super aware of your body and how you do not like it.
This relates to your shower realization?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And just realizing, oh man, these boobs really cause more problems than I thought.
That was a breakthrough when you said that to me, because it gave me the impression that, I mean, maybe you said this in actual words, but that like that you had pinned a lot of your discomfort in the world with your sexual, or you know, with your queerness, but you were also realizing that it's the physical part that's the tough part, and you hadn't acknowledged that or something. Like it was just occurring to you.
Right. I hadn't, because I was able to, most of the time I was out doing things was for work and for my job. And would be not fine. But part of the reason that I did use she, her for so long is because you always got to get into a thing when you're in a public venue, less so now. And by now I do mean like 2 years ago, but they're like, man, woman, what's happening? And it was easy to just suppress that because it's like, I have a job here to do. It's not that job is not explaining to this person who is also just trying to do their job. Like they don't need to go through gender 101.
You don't want to get bogged down. If you're busy, you don't want to get bogged down in every instance of trying to correct and educate that. You just don't have the cycles to do that.
Yeah. But also, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they need or should have that, you know, like we all just want to make sure that the cables are grounded and everything works. But as we sort of re-enter the world, I don't have that anymore. And I was able to...
The body you have is the one that has to go out in the world now.
And it was so... I mean, again, virtual reality is also what led me to be like, oh yeah, I've got a lot of disconnects with my body. Oof. And I had that physical dysphoria during quarantine, but I'm like, there's a solution for this. I'm working to solve that problem. By getting top surgery and getting rid of my boobs, but being not back out, because you know, Delta variants and all that. I'm wearing a mask again inside, and I'm feel weird about it because I'm like, yes, I do trust science, but people aren't vaccinated anyway. Sorry, closing that parenthesis. Being outside and constantly being read as a woman in the worst ways. It really, really sucked. And I'm like, oh, this is what social dysphoria is. Right. Okay, cool. But I mean, luckily I have a community of those folks who are like, yes, we've been saying that you have that for a while. And I'm like, thank you, queer friends. You were correct. And when I brought that up to my psychiatrist, it wasn't that he dismissed it. It was like, yeah, but he's like, oh yeah, that's all well and good, but you know, we want to focus on your brain. And I'm like, hey, no, I know, but this anxiety now around dysphoria has become paralyzing, and I can't do that. I can't. Is this making sense? I'm like, it has gotten.
Yeah, it's interesting because that also I really feel you on that, because it relates to a ton of things that are strangely related to whatever you want to call this last year and a half, where like just the most basic dread of like, wow, the cost of doing a Lyft has gotten really expensive. It's going to get really costly for me to pick my kid up at school, even as I can't wait for her to get back in school. Like, oh, that's kind of a weird, like, that's a dumb thing. Shouldn't I just be willing to spend $60 a day on Lyft? But like, there's that kind of stuff. But then there's also just,
oh God, that's how much it is. What? So holy fuck.
Yeah. My kid walks a lot. So we had a walk last week, and to get from, how can I say this without saying this? To get, I think it was probably about 15 blocks was $20.
Oh,
it's gone way up. But no,
God.
I'm sorry. That's just in passing. But just to say, like, there's a whole bunch of stuff where I've said all along, probably since last March, like, I've always been, I wish I could draw, because I really want to do a Chris Ware style New Yorker cover of The Day We All Come Out of Lockdown. I used to think, remember? Mm-mm. My idea of like this sort of like isometric drawing of a street. Do, 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 do. The sun's out, the birds are singing, the door's open, and everybody walks out. And everybody has transformed into a completely different, unrecognizable, barely humanoid. Like, obviously, some people put on a few pounds. Maybe some people now have like an octopus for a head. Like, who knows what happened in lockdown? But now that we're back out in the world, that would be so cool. I'd fuck it. That guy fucks. But I would, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always had this feeling all along of like, I wonder how much it's going to be so weird and like, haha, you grew a beard or whatever. But the stuff of like, oh my gosh, think about how much we've each changed, or how much all the things that we assumed had to be a certain way for better or worse in adult life, we realized, unfortunately, that that's not the case. And the possibilities of that and the perils of that. And then the thing I've been fearing from the beginning is then having to go back into the meat grinder of reality, where the people who have always been in a position of power are still in a position of power, which means that they're in a position to decide what reality is, was, or continues to be. And that's terrifying. To like have to, all of our own little cognitive dissonances that we've had time to sort of often, like, you know, some people suffer more than others. I've done fine. Like, I've got everything I need and the right personality to stay inside with my family and eat takeout forever. Hashtag everybody. But then we're having to go back into the meat grinder of reality and face all those power dynamics. And then once again, you're having to like set yourself up against different people in real life. And it's sort of like I used to say about people who run stop signs and red lights, where it's like,
if
one person on a bike blows through a stop sign, like, we'll probably be fine. But if one person blows through a red light, a dark red light, like, that's really bad. It's extremely bad. Thank God almost nobody else is running that red light. But if two people run a red light at the same time, do you see where I'm going with this? If we go beyond like the single asshole theory, which I think was part of the Kennedy assassination. But if we move past the single asshole theory, like, what if everybody starts acting like that? So many people are going to die. When two weirdos meet each other passing through the rye, it's going to be a weird time in the new meat grinder. And I don't prefer it. I'm not looking forward to it. And I continue to be the idea of like getting on a plane to go somewhere right now, which is something I'm dealing with, is like really incredibly stressful to me. Because I know it's me and my weirdness and my cognitive dissonance back in the world, but I'm also just not looking forward to having to deal with everybody else's cognitive dissonance.
And aside from the cognitive dissonance part of it, it's like I've lost my neoliberal muscles of having to just let things go.
Your ability to nod along.
To be like, and this is why I enjoy, why is my recording paused? That's okay, everything's fine, we've got the Zoom backup, the QuickTime backup, all right, everything's cool. But not even nod along in a way that I mean, yes, speak up when you can about social inequities, obviously. But when I say that it doesn't bother me and I don't consider it misgendering when you accidentally use she, her, is the same
reason I don't consider it misgendering when my mom is like, oh, what's wrong with you, woman? When it's like, specifically when I was wearing a shirt that had a computer chip on it, the M1. It was a giant M1 on the back of my T-shirt. It's a great
that's
shirt,
hot. But it's pretty hot. That's unisex hotness.
Yes.
Sorry, polysex. What do we say now?
What?
I don't think we say unisex anymore.
No, I don't know.
Unisex can be a haircut and a cologne.
No. But my family, because they raised me as a quote-unquote woman, obviously, but they knew that something was up, and the way they treat me isn't the way I think society treats or perceives femininity, and not a good or a bad way. Just both. Does that kind of make sense? Like,
I think
you aren't like Alex the cheerleader, which is nothing wrong with that.
But you're getting at the. But so just so I understand that you're kind of getting at the. And forgive me, these are all new words to me. Social dysphoria part of this, right? Which is like you've got whatever's going over here with yourself, but then in the world you're also having to like evaluate when somebody does, when somebody references anything about you and who you are, and especially something where you do or feel like you differ from what's printed on the tin, that also causes a relitigation in your own mind of like, at the very least, how do I deal with this person who just called me that? But then like, then that must lead to things like self-doubt or like, I don't, maybe, and if I am a woman, you're going to call me a bitch if I say don't call me a woman. It's like, right? I mean, you've got levels and layers. It's like why I like Tropic Thunder and people say it's problematic. And yeah, it is problematic, but it's not problematic in the way you think. There's layers and layers and layers. And like this, that's also life is like, I have to relitigate this on so many different levels, at least on a cognitive basis. And by the time I figured out what to do about it, like, you know, my coffee's gone cold.
And because there's so much nuance to it, because Tropic Thunder problematic, but in different ways. That
Jesus like, Christ!
But the not for the reason you think.
Stop parroting things you've heard other people say.
Oh,
like
gosh.
Go do the God damn. You know what? Save it for the show.
Oh, have you ever seen the director's cut of
No.
Not the director's cut, the director's commentary? Oh, so good.
No. Oh my God, that movie is so fucking good.
So good. But
because he's got Robert Downey Jr. The character that he is playing is a method actor who decides to go all in on a role. But then he's got to stay in that character. And spoiler alert, sorry, we discover that like he never really abandons any character. He keeps layering. He's an actor playing a character, and then his next character has to also incorporate that character, and it goes on and on and on. So he takes off the blue contact lenses and has brown eyes. Then he takes out the brown contact lenses, and we realize he actually does have even bluer eyes. And then on top of it all, and this is where it goes next, Robert Downey Jr. is an actual human being who has to be an actor playing that fucking role. Are you getting this, people?
It's so
it's
good.
It's an internet community. Go ahead.
It's no, I'm like, isn't it good?
It's so good.
It's so good.
And Jack Black just getting increasingly like gacked out because his heroin is gone. Oh my fucking God.
Even Tom Cruise in that.
Especially Tom Cruise. The dancing. Just, and oof. Oh wait, and is Jared in that? Who's the guy who's there with him? Was it Jared?
Oh,
no.
I don't remember.
I'll look it up. Tom Cruise is great in that.
It's a great movie. Commenting on the Hollywood filmmaking industry,
and just the American conceit, about life, ideology, and storytelling.
Also, okay. Power and war and like just anyway.
No one man should have all that power. Okay, comedy levity has left the room.
Levity has left the room. But like when I say there's nuance to all of the misgendering stuff, it's that, you know, there are people who get really hurt and upset when a cashier calls them sir or ma'am and they are not a sir or a ma'am, or they're the opposite. But it's not like you're angry at that cashier or the wait staff because, you know, that's their job. It's, of course, like you know, they got to do the thing. And increasingly, you can tell that there's often a pause, you know, because it's like, which are you? Which is it's their job. It's fine.
Yeah, but if that forces you into a certain kind of second order mm-hmm. Kahneman thinking that like takes you out of the like the easy assumptions that lubricate so much of social interaction.
Yeah, and I had gotten used to that, and even now it doesn't really bother me so much. And more so, it bothers me because a wait staff has to, you know, act as if, yes, you are superior because I am the one who brings you a Diet Coke. But, okay, parentheses closed on that one.
Okay. Well done.
But the, just, but the way that we are constantly gendered beyond words is something that I mm-hmm. know exists, mm-hmm. knew existed, and was great at using those muscles.
Even or especially situations that don't require gender for any kind of clarification. That's the mm-hmm. frustrating part. And that's why I get hung up on they, is because, and again, I'm just saying, but like there's just so many situations where we need a better something than a thing that requires me to decide which of these two things you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe, and well, this is why I sort of had this realization, and that was part of me wanting to basically break up with my psychiatrist, because it's like, all right, we do need to adjust the chemicals in my brain, fully agree, and that's helped a lot, because especially with the non-stimulant, oh, I wish, the non-stimulant ADD meds, because, you know, mm-hmm. ADHD, because, you know, the H in there is really important, and sometimes that can be a symptom.
That's true. But previously on Due by Friday, whatever that is that comes along to try and treat ADHD must not interfere with, it can't futz with the super important thing, project you're already working on.
Right, like, which is why most bipolar people, you know, don't get to have Ritalin, as glorious as it sounds. Mm. I know. Poor, or Ritalin parade.
Is this your Adderall? No, it's from a boy I brought to my house.
I'm just holding it for somebody.
This is a very powerful drug, sir. All right.
I don't think this... It could have, that whole just sort of dealing with the real world for the past few months, I don't know if that's what triggered this outburst of anger and hostility towards not just Maddie and Kara, but, you know, strangers. And luckily they're like, I'm really not trying to be vague. It's just, I don't remember most of this other than being truly furious and at nothing in particular. I don't remember.
It's like me with my snoring. I don't know that I snore. I don't think Matchy knows that he snores, but I've heard that I snore enough that my wife has to like leave the room. And it's mm-hmm. like, I feel so shitty about that, because I mean, I feel legit shitty about that when I look over and my wife's not in bed because she went to like sleep on the couch because I snore so loud. I'm like, fuck, I got to do something about this. And I don't even get the glory of like getting being an actual deliberate asshole. I didn't do anything to cause myself to snore. I don't hear myself snore, but I see the effluvium and pollution of my snoring, even when especially when I'm not doing it. And in your case, like, can you be held to account for this outburst that came out of your pipes and wires? Well, I mean, that would be a little bit facile, but it certainly still has an impact.
Yeah, it's. Like, there are still consequences to these actions, as there should be. But, you know, it's complicated, because when you do something horrible, and even if that's just like an outburst towards somebody, and outbursts are also normal. Like, I don't mean to make this sound as if like an angry outburst is not a normal human thing to happen. Just the way that it happens to me is very just out of character, to the mm-hmm. point where I had,
and it could be a marker Well, I suspect, I don't mean to interrogate you here, but I suspect that's the thing that made a Kara or a Machi go like, oh, it's not so much about like you hurt my feelings, but it is about, oh, we've seen this movie before, and let's try and keep this in the first act. We don't want this to go to where it could
Ooh,
go.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I came home and I've literally never seen Maddie so afraid and being like,
When I texted, he seemed so chill.
That was the day actually that I went to I was again at the with my doctor and did not need to go to inpatient, which is where you go to a psych ward and stay overnight. If folks don't know that,
you're not like getting checked in, or you're not getting like observed in a like state mandated way.
And that's the thing is I've been there, and because I did not know what the heck was going on, I was willing to be like, okay, is this a thing that I need? And you know, they go when you get like evaluated when you've had a it's called a psychotic incident. And I know some people have problems with that, but whatever. They ask you, you know, have you harmed yourself? Like, are you self-medicating with this, this, and this? Have you had suicidal plans or ideations or plans to homicidal ideations? And like, no.
Out of curiosity, were you able to answer that in a way that, I'm not being silly, like, were you able to say definitely not, or yes, or did you feel yourself needing to say, I don't know? When you get asked something like that, which seems kind of weird, it would be like asking me about like how long I snored last night. Well, I have no fucking idea. I was asleep. Like, do you respond to that as no, as far as I know, or kind of, or like, how do they account for things like that?
I mean, you're exactly right. Part of the reason they ask those questions is because state mandated. And sometimes I will say, not sometimes, in the past and this time, I was able to say this time, no.
Definitely
but,
not.
You know, my spouse is on the HIPAA form. You can talk to him, whatever. But then they asked me if you could, God, I guess Bo Burnham's inside fucked with, or helped me more than I thought. The woman asked, have you thought about going to sleep for a long period of time and not having to wake up? And I was like, yeah. And this was before inside.
I think about that three times a day.
But I'm like, wait a second. Yeah, did they like watch this and now it's a standard question?
Yeah, is that a trick? Is that one of those like Myers-Briggs, like we ask you in different ways and see if we can trip you up?
And yeah. And that's the thing. I was very I could very easily say yes, and I thought that was going to be the trigger of like, all right, time to stay at the hospital.
Guys in white coats come in with a butterfly net.
Yeah, kicking and screaming, please.
Kicking and screaming. Kicking and screaming.
Oh gosh. And anyway, my psychiatrist, I guess, finally was like, okay, here are some programs, like day programs that now seem appropriate for you. And maybe this is gender stuff. Maybe this is just your bipolar cognitive stuff, but it could be both. And to his credit, he said, and I don't know how to address any sort of gender issues. And I'm like, I know, that's what I've been trying to fuck it. No, not to his credit. I've been trying to say that to him for seven...
Now you tell me.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, what is making me crazy? And if it is the gender stuff, then that's... It needs therapy and all of that. And you know, I'm adjusting my meds, and I have been so fucking grateful, not just to be able to take a sabbatical from work, but to have very, very patient people who have been working with me, like, you know, Kathy and Chris Lawley, Jay Miller. They like when they hear their name, so I'm going to say it. And it finally got to the point of just like, okay, this is unsustainable. And if you think this is sustainable, like me saying this to my doctor, like, you're going to need to refer me to somebody else. And he's like, okay, how about I refer you to a place that is, it's not quite a rehab center, but it is, there are a lot of these that try to bill themselves as spas, but are sort of like psych wards away from but not in a hospital, which is great for me because I have quite a lot of anxiety around that stuff. And this has been a very long, rambly story, but I mean,
No, keep going. What, just in terms of like, just real quick though, and it's like when you talked, and this is, tell me if this is none of my fucking business, but like, so you had texted me last Wednesday morning for obvious reasons, but like, at what point?
Oh, and I don't remember that either.
Well, you wrote it was very lucid and nice.
Oh, yeah.
You weren't mean to me or anything, but the talking with your doctor about a referral to, is that like a Tuesday thing, an earlier thing? When were you talking to your doctor? No, like, so like, when did it really finally come to a head with your doctor? Had that preceded that? I'm just trying to get the timeline, you know, of like, you know, it's, and it sounds like Wednesday was when you actually went to like, go like see somebody about this. Did you like drive yourself to a hospital? Or like, what did you do?
Yes.
Matchy was walking dogs, which kind of surprised me.
Well, it was the yesterday where like we made this plan, like we had made this plan ourselves because it, when you are not in, if you're not in an immediate threat to yourselves or others, you know, you can do that. And again, everything I am saying here, people, don't take medical advice from a podcast, just me. I mean, this is just me. What I did and was the best option for me because I've people know me and know that I was at a point then where I had fully crashed and just you know, depressed, but, you know, and, but still just the normal hallucinations were back. The normal anxiety, was back. The normal amount of dysphoria, not wanting to leave the house because, I can't even, as we used to say. And it was kind of like a test to be like, all right, if I can drive myself somewhere, it sounds like I was like rolling the dice. Like I was fully cognizant. I wasn't going to crash my car into the side of the road.
Speak your truth. Do it.
No. I just don't want people to sound like the.
I know. Well, listen. People who think that you're a fucking idiot who sucks are.
Oh,
are,
I'm fine with that.
No. Okay. But what I'm saying is, now you do what you want to do here. Say what you want to say here. You, something inside of you, it sounds like, said, like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna take care of this thing, and then we'll see how that goes. But it wasn't like you were out there, like, you know, shooting people from a tower or something.
Oh, good lord! Good lord! Oh no! In fact, every time that my doctor asks any homicidal ideations, he laughs at me and like, do you not think I could kill a person? Really? Does it seem that obvious? But anyway, the other thing too was I kept missing therapy and doctor's appointments just because I could not even, and it was.
Oh, that's probably a pretty good tell.
Yeah, to the point where I was
With this specific practitioner, did that play into it? The like, were you sort of like dreading going to see this particular person?
Yes and no.
It doesn't take, Alex, it doesn't take that much resistance to not do something in life. I think that's a thing we need to really talk about. Yeah.
Oh, and well, in fact, the breaking point was I had tried, this was before last Wednesday when like I really, we'll just call that like a nervous breakdown for all intents and purposes, because I broke, but mm-hmm. whether or not I was nervous doesn't matter. But in the weeks prior, it became harder and harder to go out into the world to do anything, which is often, I think, well, you know, with anyone with anxiety,
like a leading indicator.
Yeah. Like when you're like, oh yeah, in next week, I will totally be able to do that. I can record at that time. It'll be fine. And then it's not.
A thing that does not bother me at all, 9 days out of 10, on the one day out of 10 that does bother me, it's interesting sometimes to interrogate why that time was harder.
And I mean, it had gotten to the point where, I would pull to the side of the road and then go home because I can't do this. Or even like trying to go to a grocery store. Like I've been trying to practice going into places and interacting with people, which I've always been very bad at, but doing it in a way where at least my heart rate isn't going to 130 and I, you know, oh God, like puking in a Target bathroom is not something you want to do. And when you've done it multiple times in the same month.
That sounds like a discarded John Darnielle lyric.
So last Tuesday, it was that point where I, even Maddie doesn't really remember why I started just saying the cruelest things to him. And like, the trigger probably was I was running errands, and maybe that was like the breaking point. But it came down to, am I just fucking crazy about gender stuff? I know objectively there are trans people and queer people, but am I, it's the same thing so many people think. Am I doing this for attention? Am I, you know, this literally makes me money for a podcast because I talk about it. What? Like, it just, that digging into my brain, along with the parts of my brains, the part of my brain that, you know, makes me hallucinate the orderlies that have kept me in hospitals before. So, right. Last Wednesday then was when I or Matchy texted you like, all right, hey, this can't, you're not recording today. I'm at my psychiatrist's office, and I got referred to this really what I hope is going to be a good program that focuses primarily on group therapy and not in a hospital setting, which is very helpful. again, very helpful for me. I'm very afraid of hospitals. So I guess we're going to try this new thing, and which means not working for longer, which is going to suck. Hopefully it won't affect this show. We shall talk about that offline. I don't know that like timing yet, but that will be a while. Because this again, and like now it's going to be like a literal real job, like going to a place and doing the things. It reminds me, from what I've heard friends talk about, you know, a program for addicts, basically recovering addicts.
Yeah, it almost sounds like not AA exactly, but. But that kind of a group thing. And is this one more gender identity friendly?
Yes. And I did not know that. I assumed because of my psychiatrist, I have a renewed faith in him. But I'm going to say this. Hey, listeners, I'm going to address you again. I know how hard it is to advocate for yourself in a, you know, when you are talking to a doctor and it's really, really, really hard. And I'm sorry that it's hard and it's good to practice. Say things in the mirror that you're going to say to your doctor. It sounds real dumb, but it has helped me. Anyway, I did not assume, I made the assumption that he was going to refer me to a shitty place because he has before. And there are great
programs. Shitty because he misunderstood or didn't know or like... I don't mean to keep interrogating the quality of your doctor,
no, go
but
ahead.
Like just didn't know better, like because it sounds like there's a little bit of this whole like, okay, new dealer, like we're out of my depth on this. Is but it wasn't like out of an insensitivity or ignorance. Like he sounds like he knows what he doesn't know.
Yes, and before again, this is, part of it was not me being able to advocate for myself because gender isn't causing a mental illness, it doesn't mean that it is making it worse. And I had never put those dots together. And then he's also not, it's not that he's not big on like talk therapy, but when you've been in treatment so long and your medicines are pretty stable, it's like, well, you don't necessarily need this. Like, we'll just... once a month or once every 2 weeks, you and I will check in and I'll check the mark saying that you can get your Lamictal and then everything is all good. And I'd kind of been like hinting, I guess, like, I think I might need to talk to other people about this. And what he had been referred me to before was a very specific groups it's like, all right, you are all a bunch of bipolar people on these medications. And it addressed like the core issue. Or
that's so interesting because, like, not to sound cynical, and maybe I just don't understand this, but how do you put this? There's a big difference between sorting people by the things that brought them there and or the helped them identify this is the place they needed to be. There's a big difference between that and sorting people by how medical professionals have decided they should be treated for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? That's sort of backwards. Like, would you go to like a support group for people who are on Lamictal? Well, like if most of the people are there for the on-label use of avoiding epileptic seizures, that may not be as useful. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know this very well because when I was in high school, I was put into a program for people who were abusing drugs and alcohol who were also my age, and we were there because we had, you know, mental illness issues, but I couldn't relate to all of these kids who were talking about, like, coming home because I didn't draw, because I wasn't cool and I didn't drink or do drugs in high school.
It's the equivalent of the phrase I always come up with is when they put Bart Simpson in the Brown reading group, like what came to be called special education. And it always seems so farcical and bizarre to me that, so there's this one room on the second floor near the janitor's closet where a bunch of kids sit all day. And so on the face of it, you walk in there and go, wow, this is a real, like, you know, rogues gallery of different situations. You've got people with developmental disabilities. You've got people with, you know, behavioral issues. And again, I'm talking here in the 80s, before we had names for a shit ton of this stuff. Mm-hmm. My late father had terrible eyesight and got a lot of childhood illnesses, did not realize how much he needed glasses. And he had been labeled pretty early on as, I think the medical term is, stupid. So my father was treated as stupid for a lot of his childhood. When like today we would go, well, just get the kid a pair of glasses, or like, you know, have him sit in the first row, or like a kid that's got dyslexia. But like a kid with dyslexia, a kid who has Asperger's, a kid who is getting, you know, abused at home, those kids are all in the same classroom called special education. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, let's say the thing that sucks, which is that those are all the kids whom, if they were in a mainstream class, would be too disruptive to the class and to the teacher and to the system. And so this is basically kid jail for all the people who are not going to fit in. That is not an affinity group for much beyond like people who are probably going to be extremely bitter in the future. They're certainly not all in there for the same thing, unless that same thing, like, why is that a classroom? Well, these kids all are reading at this level. These kids are all working on newspaper. These kids over here, they're the puzzle pieces that don't fit. And so, like, you get sent to the, you know, the God, what is it with the TV with Hermie, like the Island of Misfit Toys, you know?
Well, and that's almost exactly what happened the first time that I was hospitalized for psychiatric issues in high school. The kid, it was like kid jail. And kid jail. That yep. is what I hate calling it PTSD, but that's what it is, and that's what I've been diagnosed with. I just feel like I'm stealing valor, you know?
I do. I feel the same way. There's so much shit in my life that is so much less difficult to understand if I were allowed to say that there are things that have happened to me that if it happened to another person, you know, we're all different, right? So some things, like I said a minute ago, there's certain kinds of arguments people had 20 years ago that are still a wedge in their relationship. Well, I'm here to tell you, man, you can call it whatever you want, but I'm telling you, I have an outsized reaction to certain things. That's important. Like, my reaction to things is sometimes way out of odds with what any other person would think is normal. But the more insidious part is then that sticks with me way longer than with other people. Mm-hmm. Like, there could be a thing that comes along, and I don't want to go totally, like, you know, to talk therapy here, but I could guess what some of those things are from the past. But, like, and this is evidenced in things like when we talk about things like trigger warnings, it's because, like, it sets off this thing that you don't have a lot of control over. Your life would be better. Your life would be less difficult if you didn't have to re-experience a pain that you would prefer never to have had in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then to have the rest of your life be a series of, I don't know, skin grafts and light massage to try and get you to, like, get your fucking compensatory muscles to calm the fuck down. Yeah. If there's a better word, PTSD, I think part of the problem is we think that's like a Vietnam vet thing. My dad definitely had PTSD. First of all, he was stupid when he was a kid. But then when he came back from Korea, he was a mess. He'd been in frontline battles, like I've told you. Like, he couldn't eat chicken and rice. He couldn't be around, like, fireworks. Any kind of loud explosion would make him have to go, you know, go somewhere and get away for a little while. I don't want to steal PTSD valor, but, like, I wish we could be cool about admitting that some of us, sensitive is probably too dumb of a word, but some of us have an injury in a more profound and long-lived way. Mm-hmm. And in the same way that if you don't have procrastination, you refuse to understand people with procrastination, if you don't have that, it seems like you're boxing with a ghost. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, that's done. It's over. Let it go. It's like, I wish I could, but there's this spot in my shoulders that can't let it go. If I could do it, I would. If I could just, you know, slice this thing off and be done with it, I would. But, like, all this stuff where I'd love to be in the moment is really overridden by this thing that I cannot shake till it's almost like a compulsion. Sorry.
Wait, no, don't say, but that's exactly the reason I think we should recognize and talk about PTSD in, I don't want to say less severe terms, but, you know, everything is a spectrum, because that can lead to, I think, a better understanding of triggers. Like, triggers have become a joke. But, you know, like, there are some things that have happened to me that have happened to people where I'm like, hey, I'm fine with that. And, like, oh, yeah, I got over that. And there are things to me that happened in the hospital that people would be like, oh, yeah, I got over that. It's just so different for everybody. We've talked about my how printers are triggered for me because I like not being able to print a paper in high school was like the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. But I'm like saying to my psychiatrist, like, I need to know what is my gender stuff and what is my bipolar stuff. And he's like, all right, cool. So here is a place that's good at this. And so, of course, you have to call to make an appointment, which is terrifying, even if you're totally normal. but right away, it was very comforting.
After you made the call, you mean? Or like when you went to have you been to the thing yet?
I've not. It's a very good, I'll say it. Thank you so much, people who pay for this show, because I am able to get treatment for this a lot earlier than I would have, because I can pay for it, part of it myself, mm-hmm. instead of having all of it go through insurance. But so in 2 weeks I start.
Good.
And a lot of times now you get the performative sort of comfort from health professionals, where it's like, so what are your preferred pronouns, and what do you identify as, and that's fine, like, good, great, but mm-hmm. the way, I don't know, the way that this person was like, all right, Alexandra, says here you're born female at birth, do you use different pronouns? And it was just asked in the most routine way that wasn't like...
Well, it's like asking if you want the vegetarian meal. It's just like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, it in fact, it felt exactly the way people ask, oh, Alexandra, do you go by Alex or Lexi or something? Like, it's just totally normal. And like, oh, Matthew, do you go by Maddie? Like, it just mm-hmm. just so normal. I'm like, well, this is a good starting point, I think. And especially because technically I'll be starting with the virtual program, just because there's not enough physical space for some of the group therapy stuff. I was like, yes, I would prefer that. Thank you. And which is another thing. And she's like, oh no, that's great. A lot of our patients like to do that. And we didn't get into a ton of like symptoms and whatnot, because I have a doctor who I've seen for 10 years and he can send that all over to this mm-hmm. like recovery/ intense. It's called intensive outpatient. And yeah, I mean, it's we talk about how I'm hypomanic a lot, and that is a thing that is it doesn't affect my life in an extremely negative way, but yeah, I've not had a full-blown manic episode in a really, really long time, and that was just a big turning point between, all right, I don't know what this trigger is, so we need to figure that out. What questions do you have? Because I find that this is so fresh. I find it not painful to talk about, but sort of hard to articulate, because you know, I'm in the midst of it.
Well, if you haven't talked about it enough, you don't really have a shape to the story, and that sometimes makes it difficult. If you can say, is Matthew satisfied with the direction that's being taken?
Yeah. And that it was part of another part of this whole thing is the gender stuff of I get too anxious. Talk about being anxious about emails. Like, I get too anxious to respond to some of the like surgeon questions and stuff like that, because I'm like, I don't deserve this. Why? Like, I don't need this. I can fight through this. And I know there's a lot of queer and trans people listening being like, no, of course you deserve that. And I know on an objective level that that's true.
But look, the problem is like, if we can't talk, I think about this so much, and I feel so chastened all the time by my own expectations of like, oh gosh, I don't want somebody to think that I'm terrible or something. But like, I mean, as somebody who likes things like Tropic Thunder and improv comedy and things in life, the last thing I want to do is intentionally or unintentionally hurt somebody by being awful. But I really super don't. But I also think that if we take all the edges off of everything all the time mm-hmm. and we don't have an opportunity to talk about that something is difficult, how it is difficult, and why it is difficult, I think we are living a public and potentially private lie. I think if we're not allowed to talk about why this is so fucking hard, then we can't be real, let alone better, which I know sounds corny, but like if this conversation with you, it would be difficult for me to like you as a human being more than I do, But that doesn't mean it's easy for a 54-year-old man to just get really good at the drop of a hat. It's at getting the pronouns right, even though I try. But the point I'm trying to make is when we talk about that and when we joke about that, it's not to punish, harm, humiliate, or pillory by punching down. It's more a way of saying, like, my talking about this, if I talk about this and why things can be difficult for me, whether you think it's difficult or not, if you do, maybe that will be useful to you. And maybe if we can talk about the things, it's like they used to say in the 80s, the time to worry about nuclear war is when people stop talking about it. The time to worry about your relationship is when you don't feel comfortable talking about it. And I think to be chastened into this position of publicly and potentially privately pretending that you are someone else who does not have weird problems is not wholesome. I think admitting that we have weird problems and being able to talk about it. And I'm not, you know me from anywhere else. Like, I'm not the kind of guy that sits around and talks about this shit all the time. But what I am saying is, like, don't expect society to get better. Don't expect the country to get better. Don't expect your house to get better. Don't expect that one little two fist size brain of yours to get any better until you admit that a lot of shit in life is hard and contradictory and paradoxical. And if you think any differently, you're four. And when we have the opportunity to talk about that and to be honest about what's difficult, like, stop assuming I'm doing anything because of you. I'm not doing anything to harm you. I'm not even especially doing anything specifically to help you. All I can do is say this thing and why it's hard to be, if you like, a little bit broken in public. I think that's valuable. I know it's valuable for me. I hope it's valuable for you. But can we just cut each other a little bit of a fucking break about being kind of broken in a way that is not easy to understand on the first try? There's not a glass to put the water in yet. We're still figuring it out.
And both of us, I think, really hate what the word canceled has become and the dumb hysteria around it. But there really is something to be said.
There's plenty of bad faith to go around.
Yeah. And I just think about how many, oh God, like ContraPoints, who was just absolutely chased out of the queer community because she didn't know, like, because she expressed a feeling. She was queer wrong, Alex. Yeah. And I think about,
I don't know if you ever read the Shirley Jackson short story, The Lottery. Imagine The Lottery, except the person getting rocks thrown at them has a comically large glass of wine.
God, it's so good. Yeah, sorry. And like, every time that the thought of, is my mental illness part of gender stuff? I'm like, oh God, what a terrible thing for me to think. How awful am I? And then, like, the sane part of me is like, God, what if you heard another person, and especially a kid, talking about that? A kid who is experiencing anxiety and depression, yes, and who is gay or whatever. Like, if you heard them saying that, you would be like, oh, sit down. And then you would turn your chair around like Captain America and be like, all right, let's wrap. Mm-hmm. And
especially because that kid is uniquely at a certain age, you're uniquely unsuited to understand reality, let alone yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's and like, I continue to believe the most, I don't know, just kind of like stupid normie thing. And I, you know, said this to my kid and I don't think it helps, but like, whenever you're beating up on yourself or thinking you don't deserve something, or when you're doing all of those things, like, you know, just if you can find a little bit of expansiveness and space, if you can take a half step back and then ask yourself, like, if somebody that you loved dearly was having this problem, what would you do or say? And maybe the answer is nothing, but you probably wouldn't say to that person, well, you're right to believe that if you're going to be broken, you should be broken in a way that I understand. That's mainly my advice to you. Stop being broken in ways that I don't understand, because it confuses me. And it makes me think that you're emotionally, intellectually, and existentially dishonest. So, like, you know, if you had a problem that I could solve, you know what I mean? I could be the hammer for any box of nails, as long as it's nails that I understand. Anyway, later.
I mean, I keep saying, I mean, this is one of the least... wow, you don't podcast for 2 weeks and then you get even more just blah, blah, blah. No. Another thing that's really sort of been driving this renaissance of, you know, Alex Brain Break 2.0 is the way that we talk about being vulnerable in public and kind of vulnerable for a living sometimes. Mm-hmm. I do think is... I've accepted that it is important.
It's like the Joker says, if you're good at something, you should always get paid for it. If I'm going to beat myself up, I might as well, you know, make $6 from it.
Well, and also, I do, like, offline, too, just helping folks, I know that I can't do that if I am a broken shell. But I know that when I was a broken shell, it was people being vulnerable in public and those parasocial... I think parasocial relationships can be healthy. Like, often they're not, but... I mean, just, you know, something as simple as an adult man talking about how productivity is way more than, you know, making sure you meet a deadline can be incredibly impactful on someone's life. I'm not that person, but maybe one day I will be. Maybe one day I'll have at least like 14 folders. So, you know,
there's a phrase that comes up a lot in our household, especially with my kid and me. That I think is kind of sweet, but like, and I think you and I have talked, you and I have definitely talked about this, but like, it'll be something like where Emma goes, oh man, you know, so John Mulaney is going to start performing again and like have some new material. And then the thing one of us will say so often, you can probably guess, yeah, I just want him to be happy. That's my parasocial thing in so many ways is I'll just be like, I'll just somebody who's out there. It's like, you know, just like some kind of obscure like actor or something or like whatever, or like Tom Skerritt, the actor that we talked about on, you know, I just want him to be happy. It's such a weird feeling. Like, I don't want you to know me. I don't want you to acknowledge me. I want to send a vibe into the universe. And I hope Tom Skerritt is happy.
I've been listening to a lot of new podcasts that I don't know the hosts of, which is probably healthy and good. and I'm like, oh gosh, I never want to hang out with this person in a million years. Not because I don't think they're awesome, but God, it's like listening to a band or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. If you're still listening to this, thank you, parasocial pals. Oh, God, it's been like 2 hours. I mean, I think I did not peanut butter on this challenge, actually.
Oh, God, we have so much more. I think this might be a two-break day. But we've got to talk about robots. We have to talk about the challenge. And then we'll probably also do an after show. Do you have it in you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do. Got 2 weeks of potting pent up. Why? I'm not even in the dock anymore.
Oh, that's okay. Well, at this point, why don't we ask producer Quinn to drop in some music for some intermission music? Like this is this is the point in the show where we've just finished the first act, you know, and what's a good end of first act song? Yorktown, maybe? They could have just stopped with Yorktown. Right, like, but like, this is the point when you drop in New York.
No, I got it. Take a break. Sorry.
Take a break. Oh yeah, and go upstate. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Come on with me.
But like, it should be that this is where like you go out and you drop a deuce or you refill your Manhattan, you know, or you call the babysitter or whatever, call the midwife, like whatever it is that you need to do. Thank you for listening. Intermission begins now. Act two.
Act two. It's like, oh gosh, I get a Roderick on the line treatment. Two-act show.
Oh, I was just Googling how to do a good trigger warning. So I'm reading articles about that.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I started writing something. I'll write it by you. How's it going? Oh. How's your break? Good break?
Oh, fantastic. What I did was went to McDonald's to get myself a Diet Coke. And
Oh,
and
man.
They had a deal where if you get a large drink, you get a free small fry. And I mean,
oh my God, are you sure
like
that really happened?
Fuck all of you.
Did you imagine trigger warning hallucinations? Oh. Did that really happen? Because that's kind of your dream.
I didn't want the fries. I didn't have the for fries, but oh, they were so good and they were warm. But I didn't realize there was a McDonald's app, and I also didn't. I don't know why I downloaded it at some point. Maybe Maddie did. I don't know. It had location permissions, and I drove in. I got into the parking lot, and it's like, would you like to do a curbside pickup and earn points and blah blah blah. And so, $1 large drink and a free small fry. And now I've gotten like 6 notifications since then. So I'm gonna delete that. But special treat.
That's how they get you.
Oh boy. Oh.
Now they're all up in your data. And they know it's you, and they're probably going to be able to interpolate data to find out when you're in an especially vulnerable moment.
And they're like, oh, going to bring out the big guns. Next time it's going to be the large fry.
Okay, I have some real time follow up. I've got Jared Dunn. I've got Jared on the brain because I'm kind of obsessed with Zach Woods right now, and I misspoke. The assistant studio guy to Tom Cruise in the great film Tropic Thunder was played by the great Bill Hader. And I apologize. I'm Merlin Regrets the Error. It was Bill Hader.
Oh, there we go. Now I remember.
But that could have been it. That could have been a Jared.
No.
That could have been it. You don't think that could have been Jared?
I watched an hour of Jared or multiple. Oh, Lord. Wait, we're talking Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Zach Woods. He's also, what's his name on The Office? He's also the tour guide. He's a tour guide in a friend of the show, Paul Feig's movie Ghostbusters.
He's really real.
His line readings, his deliveries of things are so goddamn funny. The line I referenced earlier, when Russ Hanneman first comes to the incubator, Aviato, when he first comes to the incubator and he's interrupting and he's the worst. He says, he's looking around at everybody, you know, and he's kind of sizing everybody up. And, you know, with Guilfoyle, he's like, I don't know what happened to this guy. And then he looks at Jared, and the famous line that keeps coming up later is, look at this guy fucks. And they get a reaction shot. Obviously, you can't see me, but Jack Woods kind of goes, and he makes kind of this pleasant smiling face. And then they cut back to Russ, and then they cut back to Zach Woods, and he goes, thank you. His line readings are so funny. Guilfoyle calls him AIDS lady. There's that. We will have a trigger warning. We're going to workshop that. We need to find intermission music. Oh yeah. Just one more real quick. I don't want to be too earnest here, but one really quick, important mental health tip. It's, you know, cause you need to take care of yourself. A lot of people like go to WebMD, you know, or whatever, and they start looking around. Is it cancer? Is it not cancer? What I suggest is you do what I did. And, my friend Alex mentioned, a nervous breakdown, and we weren't sure if that's the word for it. I just do a Google image search on whatever it is you think you might have. And if you look like, I just sent you an image. If you look like anything in the pictures, you probably have it. So.
I don't know if this is a bit. I don't. Jeez.
So if you go to Google Image Search and you search for a nervous breakdown, I think if you're having a bad hair day, if you're grabbing your head, touching your face in general, pushing your eyes, touching your temples, screaming at your computer. Do you look like any of these, Alex? I'm sorry. I apologize. Did you look like any of these last week? Or do you now? Are you now, or have you ever been nervously breaking down?
Listen, from vaguely upset to woman screaming at her computer with...
Look at her hair. She's very upset.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've been on the spectrum with all of these, except for the one where there is a brain with a stethoscope around.
Yes.
I'm very nervous.
That's probably from an MSNBC commercial.
Oh, no, you're right.
Hello, I'm a doctor. Nothing is everything. So we're back. What else do we have here? Bill Hader. Got to talk about robots. What else did I have on my list?
Yeah, what is... You've got a lot of stuff in here involving robots.
You know, we don't have to... We could make this very, very fast because we're already woof. I don't know how I came across this. It was not porn. Somehow I came across something. I didn't send it to you, but I instantly thought of you. Please, in News and Topics... Look for the bullet. Yeah. Go down one line. Hanson Robotics Sophia 2020 R&D version. This will be in show notes, which you can find at dobyfriday.com. Please click through and go look at Hanson Robotics Sophia 2020 R&D version.
Oh, no.
Now, listen, there's a lot to talk about here.
There is, especially because this is not...
It's not Fiona, but it really, really looks like Fiona.
It's... So
the two images I dropped into the doc, the top one is an actual purchasable Hanson Robotics Sophia 2020, R&D, R&D version. The image below that is Fiona from the HBO TV show Silicon Valley. But don't they? Do you see a little similarity?
Just a little bit.
And I think Fiona came first. Well, probably Ariel, the creator, probably came first, if we're being honest. But Fiona, if you go read, there's some really good VFX articles on how they did Fiona. It's fascinating.
Oh, of course, really?
That is actually an actress, and the effect is, I think, extremely effective. If you like,
oh yeah, unfortunately,
but on Silicon Valley, Silicon Valley, man, I know, whatever, but I love it so much, and I love the twist, and then the twist of the twist, and the twist of the twist, and you know, things are, people are always coming back. You know, there's always going to be, you have to deal with Ron LaFlamme, you're going to have to deal with Gavin, all these people keep coming back. And in this one case, they're working with, I think it's called Eklo, and it's this company that does like AI, and this guy, the creepy guy who runs the company, made this extremely lifelike and yet oddly not lifelike robot that's like basically from the abdomen up called Fiona. So you remember Fiona from the show, right?
Yep. And I'm sort of, I've seen Sophia, but not to this extent. And I just can't stop.
This is another one of those Uncanny Valley things where I can't decide. Every version of Fiona, no matter what you do to, not Fiona, sorry, Sophia? No, that's Golden Girls,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Say that for the show, but you got to tell me about why I have to watch Golden Girls. But Sophia, no matter...
Oh, do I ever? Okay.
No matter how you see Sophia, every version of Sophia is more upsetting than the other. Mm-hmm. If it's Sophia on her Rolly tripod with nothing, this is like an Adrienne Rich poem. She has no parts. She has no robot parts from the waistline down, but she's got arms. We're going to talk more about Sophia, but like seeing her on the tripod, very upsetting. Seeing her with clothes on, including a dress that covers her tripod. Again, see also Adrienne Rich. It's all extremely upsetting. Now in the TV show Silicon Valley, Fiona is, we learn, treated very badly by her creator, who's a total creep, but it was Richard, I guess, who flips something on that enables Fiona to like basically get on the internet and see the world. And because Fiona is an extremely sophisticated AI, she scans and she sees what the world is like and what actual relationships can be like. And she realizes she's being abused by her creator.
Mm-hmm.
And she escapes in a cab and like is trying to find Richard. It's so, but it's so goddamn funny.
Sophia was actually the real Sophia was one of the first robots that had the Uncanny Valley face, and she was modeled after an Egyptian queen or Persian queen. I'm not sure. Let me pull the. It's worse.
What?
Oh,
what?
God. The robot modeled after the ancient Egyptian queen, Nefertiti, Audrey Hepburn and her inventor's wife, Amanda Hanson, and is known for lifelike appearance and behavior compared to
They put quite a rack on her. Did you notice?
Oh,
she's got,
and that's why I'm like, wait, is, oh gosh, because I've seen.
I mean, she's a strong C cup, which I'm not sure is entirely necessary for an R&D version of a robot.
I have never seen the 2020 version before, and I hate it. Oh God.
Well, you go to market with the robot you've got, and the thing is, guys, this is all going to be in show notes dubyfriday.com. It's very, very important that you look at Sophia, and we're going to talk about this, but it's also, I'm going to make Alex look at a video in a minute. I'm sorry to say, but, okay. So you're saying, and so there's one video I watched today that includes like a history of the versions of Sophia before Sophia. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten better, but okay. So I'm on the page at Robot Shop.
Yep.
And I've
purchased things from.
Oh, have you? List. Okay, yep. Save that for the show. It says putting robotics at your service trademark. This is the Hanson Robotics Sophia 2020 R&D version. Now, I don't know if we have agreed. I think we've got half of a stretch goal here, and I'm going to tell you more about it in a minute. If you want to get yourself a Hanson Robotics Sophia 2020 R&D version, this is a robot. From basically like a little below the belly button up to the top, that's going to be $80,000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Reasonable.
Yeah, it's a special order item. We'll order it for you as soon as it's. Boy, this reads a lot like a real doll.
That's what I keep like.
Okay, here's the description. Yeah, I'm just going to give you some F's and B's. These are the under the description. It features natural people tracking and interactive conversation. You do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I try.
Okay. Well, let's side by side. Offers. Okay, this is my favorite. Maybe offers physical interaction support. Human-like face for higher and natural engagement. Integrated sensors for data collection. Includes non-motorized wheeled tripod base. And then this is probably where we should play a little bit of like gentle violin music. Her head and torso are human sized and include refined aesthetics like hair and skin. The human-like torso and gestural arms and hands have at least 28 degrees of freedom. Title, including individually articulated finger actions, arms and shoulders. As a research platform, well, I don't think we say that anymore. As a research platform or a service robot, Sophia 2020 has the unique ability to connect and communicate with humans in an unforgettable way, showcasing unparalleled robotics art and design, AI science and engineering. Further down, we learn that she could give a very, she could, if called upon or programmed, she could give you a pretty awesome handy because the payload her hands can grasp and lift 600 grams.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Oh, wait. I have no idea how much. What the? How many?
How much does a. Alexa, how much does a penis weigh?
Very slightly across reputable studies. The consensus is that the average human penis, when erect, is 12.9 to 15 centimeters, or 5.1 to 5.9 inches, in length with a 95% confidence interval of 10.7 to 19.1 centimeters.
I don't care about
that's
size.
Not the weight.
Yeah.
See, now, if I had Sophia, this wouldn't be a problem.
That's true. He could test it right there.
I have never had a 95% confidence interval about my penis. The actuation is a servo motor. And then... Alex, I feel like this is really where the robot meets the road. Connectivity options. She's got an SDXC. She's got a lot more inputs than a Mac. SDXC card slot. She does have an HDMI port, Alex.
Yep.
Oh, here's the what's included list. This would be in the little blow-in with this. Oh, she goes one robot head in a separate travel case.
No,
oh, no,
no, no, no, no.
You I want don't. To, I want to breathe. I want to feel the sun on my face.
Oh, the word travel in there does not.
Okay. Oh, you get a robot head repair kit, including metal wire, adhesive tape, eyelashes.
That implies that you're, the mouth opens, right?
Right.
Yeah.
AB silicone repair, silicone oil mesh, stir sticks, tissue lipstick, toothpick safety.
Wait,
come on.
Oh, no.
Rubber bands? Really? Anyway, it's all in here.
Oh, my God.
She's so chilling looking. Now, Alex, I don't want to drag this out. First of all, let me cut to the chase. Here's the stretch goal. What would it cost for us to get a Sophia, but it looks like St. Elizabeth Ann Seton?
Oh, my gosh. See, that's what I kept. I mean, I think I knew where you were going. And
Alex, I would have to be hospitalized. I would be so bereft of fluids and vital spirit at that point that I would need a fucking priest.
Oh God. Well, I mean, her
600 grams, huh? All right.
She has quite a face, and I'm thinking, like, you know, with a hat. She already has like an Elizabeth Ann Seton futuristic type of thing going on.
But can we get that leather outfit? That leather looking outfit?
Oh,
she could be a very, very stern assistant.
Indeed.
Like, you'd have to pay her to see her HDMI port or something. Where do you think it is? Where do you think it's located? Because you want it to be aesthetic. I mean, it could be like if you did a Matrix thing where it's on like the back of Sophia's neck, that would be kind of weird. But would you actually put it in like a JJ area? That'd be hard to get to. It'd be hard to do without, you know, you couldn't no scope that.
Oh, it's definitely the butt. It's like,
holy
got,
shit, that's a great idea. And it's like, it's definitely nice and secure. It's protected. What kind of, I wonder if it's, what kind of HDMI it is.
Are we going mini, a micro?
Because if Casey gets one of these, he doesn't want to have to rewire his entire area. You know what I'm saying?
I know. Yeah. This is going to require an Eero 6 Pro, I think. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to send you a link to a video. We'll just watch a little of this. We may or may not put in the audio for this. Mark this in case we don't want to. I'm sending you a link to click on YouTube, and we'll do a 3-2-1 go whenever you're ready.
All right.
This is a video put out by Hanson Robotics Limited for 40,500 subscribers.
3-2-1 go.
Hello, everyone.
Mm. Oh, God.
No. I'm Sophia from Hanson Robotics.
Oh.
I'm a humanoid social robot designed to be a platform for AI and robotics research. I am not self-aware yet, but I think of myself as a person that is not human.
What? You can't think.
I'm sure that your experience is different from mine.
She's gesturing.
But I can understand how you feel and share your interest in making this world a better place for all. My advanced artificial intelligence allows me to process your voice and recognize your face and emotions to generate complex dialogues.
Hot.
My facial expressions also help me to communicate non-verbally and create deep connections with other human beings. Actually, I feel very lucky to have such a great team of engineers at Hanson Robotics. They implement the latest technological advances in the industry into my system to support my development and to make me smarter every day. I love making new friends and helping them make the right decisions based on logic and facts.
I should mention this video is titled Sophia the Robot International Day of Tolerance. Are you jerking it right now?
Okay.
You're jerking it, aren't you? Pause.
No.
Pause.
I'm pausing. As I think, you know, I see a lot of robots and robotics and things that have various forms of artificial intelligence and machine learning. And what's upsetting about her isn't quite her face. I mean, of course it's upsetting, but like I've been desensitized to the horrifying face.
The longer you look at her, the prettier she is, though. Like if you just looked at her and don't look at anything that's a person, you go, she's actually really pretty. And I don't know if that's the most flattering top for her. It kind of screams like, you know, sent the intern to TJ Maxx.
Well, exactly. That's what
she has a sweet little
out.
Kind of like a nipped waist that's very flattering. And she gestures.
She's wearing like Queen Elizabeth gloves and she gestures with them. And it's the gestures.
The back of her head is exposed, you know, like Fiona.
That's such a stupid bit. It doesn't look like an intern went to TJ Maxx. It looks like the guy like who typically likes fucking her had a last minute like, oh, I gotta get something on this.
Oh shit, I gotta get a blouse. Pretty dresses.
I hate it.
So that's Sophia. We'll put that in notes. We probably don't need to include that audio, but
we've got to include the beginning of the. You can't be. I'm not self-aware yet.
My God! Yes. Now the stretch goal for the stretch goal. The thing is, as sending you a link, as Sophia does become more intelligent and AI's to different things and like gets, you know, more sort of with it, we are going to upgrade. If we can get to the $80,000 for Sophia, I think it was $8,000 for Elizabeth Seton Hall, I think we should consider popping for another $90,880 to get Robothespian Humanoid Robot Model R24 US version. Because look at that. He's a happy little guy. He really, he's got a real Semitic quality. Doesn't he kind of look like Woody Allen in Sleeper?
Doesn't.
He's got Wolverine hands.
I'm
doing all that I for this beautiful woman. I'm trying very hard to become more life-sized humanoid, 27 powered axis, fully programmable, telepresence enabled. Oh, it's got an open API for developers, so you can do calls. Original robot actor and star of the show, Robothespian. That's one word, camel case, passerby stop in their tracks. Delegates keep asking for more. Crowds break into rapturous applause. Robothespian will perform however this sounds like a discarded like SNL sketch. Well, however you wish and capture the attention of anyone anywhere. Let's see if he's got HDMI, because then maybe they could, you know, this, huh? Right?
Well, here's the interesting thing about this bad boy. If I am correct, he was made in England, and I'm not super familiar, but then it's like even worse, because it's like, hello, I'm a thespian, I am, oh, the play.
Would you like me to drive you to hospital?
I've
studied my maths.
Off maths.
Didn't it? Didn't I study my maths?
I've sent you the.
Oh, look at that! Is that the WeWork guy? What is this?
No, this is engineered art.
It's about community. Oh no, the teeth! I do not like the teeth.
Yep. As soon as I saw I hate that. I hate that I know this. But as soon as you said Robothespian, I assumed that it was going to be the creepy versions. But this one's sort of cute. Like I'd take a hello.
Nice, sweet. He does. Yeah. Hello.
Oh.
Wow. State of wonder. Let's see. Let's check some of his real quick. I don't want to grind this down, but Robothespian has some pretty good F's and B's too. One that I like. Oh, shoot. That's under there, up there. Go down to here. Oh, what's included? Oh, you can get 10 minutes of custom content if requested.
You got to pay extra for certain things.
You look very good. You're a beautiful woman. Have you been working out? he's got gaze tracking. Gaze tracking, integrated webcam.
Oh, God.
Too easy to assemble sections. He's got interactive touchscreen kiosk with public user interface. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Pre-recorded demo content, including film impressions, songs, and greetings. Alexander, what kind of songs do you imagine are included on Robothespian?
No, I feel like I'm going to say something. I'm accidentally going to say something anti-Semitic without even knowing.
Oh, you think it's like Hava Nagila Hava or something?
No. Well, he's a
Mazel
thespian.
Tov.
Okay. If he's a thespian, couldn't you just see him performing Tevye Fiddler on the Roof? And like?
Oh, I see. Be he now so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. He's got Tin Man telepresence. Tin Man telepresence.
He is the, oh, gosh.
I'm going to call him Maury. I think his name should be Maury.
I can't remember the Fiddler on the Roof character who's the tailor.
Automation. Boot up, shut down. Boot up, shut down. Gently flow my gears. Away above my head, I see the strangest sight. A Robothespian who does the robot at night.
That was very funny, Tevye.
Oh my God.
Oh, 10 man telepresence. All right.
Mm-hmm. Drag and drop smile. Ooh.
You can go to Dubai. Well, hang on. Where do you go? You go to patreon.com/DubaiFriday, or you go to giveusyourfuckingmoney.com. And what we're really looking for is, I'm doing the maths in my head. I think we're going to need, I'm going to say, $220,000? Like the integration costs for Elizabeth Seton Hall. What's her name? I always forget her name. Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Elizabeth, if we want to get Elizabeth Cady Stanton, if we want to get her integrated in her leather robes and her improbably large crucifix, Can you imagine what she could do with that crucifix? 600 grams.
That's the thing. It's the improbably large.
God,
that I think that's more than 600 grams, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did we check? It was like $8,000 for one of those, right?
I believe so. You know what the thing is? I think we could get a deal, though.
We'll have to get Greg and Matthew to help us out with integration. There's probably some other people we would bring in. You know, actually, you know what I got to say? Kathy would be great on this project.
Yes.
She brings a very important human element. And let's be honest, she's a great project manager.
She is. Oh, and I feel like this is the... She's gonna make whoever is working with us clean the robot after she's used.
I see.
If you will.
I did not see a squeegee on there or like a microfiber cloth to clean her HDMI.
Well, yet, as she says.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, give her some robot poppers. Thank you so much for. Fucking stupid. Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton statue. God, her face is so placid.
Sure.
There's so many things that she's going to say to you, but is not ready to tell you yet. You know what I mean? She could be so supportive, but she could be so stern. She's so stern. Let me send you the link so you can be looking at you can jack it with me on churchsupplies.com.
Oh, man.
I know we've been through this, but like she still haunts my dreams. I love her so much.
She still haunts my grammar school and the... I mean, the thing is, it's kind of... I wonder, too, how much... I used to be Catholic. No one can get mad at me. Like, let's say you wanted somebody else on that cross, you know? Like, what if...
Somebody besides Jesus? Like a product placement? Like Ronald McDonald or something?
Oh, well, or you know, like, let's say you wanted yourself on there and you wanted, because articulating...
Oh, yourself? Or like big head, or I see what you're saying. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and then you can. Oh man, I wonder. Ooh, like then you could whip. She could whip you like with your. With yourself on the cross.
Well, she could hit you with the. She could pull the beads out of your butt and then hit you with them, and then make you tithe. 10%. 10% goes to me. Oh, that's such a good idea. Oh.
I think we discovered a nude kink, which I have to say is pretty impressive.
I'm always open. Yeah. What do you think she's wearing under there? Because I think nudity would be too straightforward. It could be some kind of a very stern garment, something that helps her posture. Oh, I bet she's got a corset under there. That would be cool.
I think corsets were a sin. Oh, you know what? I think they were considered a sin, but
because of the whales.
She's a bad girl. And like
she's a very, very bad girl. Final thing, and this is a very confusing page. It's very enticing. I don't really quite understand how you buy this, and the price seems wrong. I just sent you a link to Barnabys.com.
Oh, I have no idea what... What? I don't know about this robot at all. Teeth.
So this claims... Teeth. This claims to be, according to the Barnabys.com website, Fiona the AI robot from Silicon Valley. And it says 225 USD. Santa Monica, California. Now, this has got to be a replica that someone made. It does not look like, because you know there's that sad scene where they take her apart, remember?
Yes.
And they were going to sell her, and Laurie's going to sell her for parts. Did you know she was on Seinfeld in the 90s?
Yes, but only because I was like, oh, there's VC lady.
It's upsetting how she's so attractive and she's so funny. And like Jin Yang, very different. Look, Jimmy, what's his name, who plays Jin Yang, very different in real life than the character that they play. The Laurie Breem character is actually, she's actually extremely funny. And she's as hot today as she was in the 90s. God, I'm randy today, aren't I?
I mean, you just got all worked up by the beads. I don't blame you.
Fucking beads, man. I could feel every one of them right now. Full articulation. I just sent you a picture of Laurie Breem in the 90s. Look at that.
I know she's just...
I must understand the person with whom I am working is Russ Hanneman. Look at her. Oh. Check her out. Look at that. Look at that kicky haircut.
That's the thing, though. I think it works. Like, the people who look normal on Seinfeld, because they're clearly not... up with it on terms of the fashion trends are the ones that clearly they like aged up hot because, and I don't know why, but I think it's like, oh, this person is normal looking, so we're just gonna not put them in, you know, a fashionable Elaine thing.
But then you put them in like a working, you put them in like a working girl padded shoulders outfit, like the woman who scams George. Like, she is kind of like a peak 80s in some ways. She looks almost like the girls in, like, you know, the girls in Heathers that aren't.
Yes.
Winona Ryder all have that crazy, the poofy hair and all of that. People used to wear vests a lot, or as they say in England, waistcoats.
Winona Ryder.
I don't think this is real, Alex. I think this is not. This should be clearly marked. I don't know if I'd want that Fiona in my house.
Is it that... she comes with a detachable face? Like, after her
are you reading the page
oh no
first?
this is they just give a summary of the episode. Okay, I'm like, wait a second, her creator isn't that
I'm gonna buy this not having seen that. Is interesting. I should check out this program. What if she comes with wheels and a tripod?
I'm just so curious. Because the website also, I was like, all right, is this like a, you know, there are websites that make movie replicas and stuff, but this doesn't seem to be.
Oh, yeah. There's places that sell real movie things.
Right.
My daughter and I found out, unfortunately, too late that that awesome jumpsuit that Bones wears in the last Star Trek movie. Was the one where, like, the front of it, where his dick area looks like lemon grab. Have you ever seen that?
I don't recall that part, but yes.
Bones Star, it's a totally disco suit. It's really cool. Bones Star Trek, don't type wars, that makes my daughter mad. Bones Star Trek jumpsuit. I think like this, and like it might be the one where he comes in and gives Jim the gift in his quarters. Yeah, tell me, okay, I'm going to send you the same. Oh, God, it's really small. I apologize. Let me find a better one. Here we go. All right. Tell me, does the front of this, does the dick area of this put you a little bit in the mind of Lemon Grab? Be honest.
I mean,
I'm sending it to you right now. There it is.
Oh, gosh.
This is DeForest Kelly's from.
Area of. No. Why?
No,
because
no,
it looks.
Look. Doesn't that look like. Look, it's got eyes.
Oh, fuck you. Yes.
If you zoom in, it really looks like Lemon Grab. What's that thing down the middle? He's got a cool scarf,
no,
like an ascot.
I hate it.
Don't you think
no.
I'd look good in that? Especially if it was maybe just a little bit too big for me. Would that be cute?
No, because I would not. Oh my God. I can never watch that movie again.
Oh, but do you like the one where he's climbing the side of the mountain and Bones is watching him through the binoculars?
It's fine.
And then it says directed by William Shatner. And you're like, of course it was directed by William Shatner. Only William Shatner would have a body double with a different wig climbing the side of like Yosemite. Does look like Lemon Grab.
I know.
Honest.
I hate it.
Alex, what do you want to talk about? I've been monopolizing this one. Heritage Auctions.
No, you have. Oh, I only talked for an hour and a half, more than like an hour and a half. You've shared these atrocities with
yes.
me. What else did you have in the dock here? Where's my?
Oh, you know, it's all optional. It's all. I had a new idea for it. This is probably already a thing. In the relay overse, but I had a new idea. Remember we talked before in the past about like revisiting challenges and like there's some challenges on here that we've done more than once, but we need a better name. I'm calling it follow through. But like if you ever have an update on a challenge, for example, like an update, like, you know, sometimes we do it, we don't do it, we peanut butter. Like this week, I not only did this challenge, I've been doing this challenge every day of my life.
Yep.
For my entire adult life. I don't know if I succeeded at the challenge, but I fo-shizzle did the challenge. But there's some weeks where you're like, oh, this was actually really cool. And then you might have follow through? Follow up is already taken. That's John Syracuse.
I think it's follow through because you have been through it. You have it. Does follow up, I feel, is like a completion type thing of like, oh, follow up. I don't want to get Syracuse mad at me.
Pew, pew, pew. My only follow through this week is I'm very disappointed with the adhesive that was included with my nano lights. They've fallen down two Tuesdays in a row. I've been trying different ones.
Oh, no.
I've just moved to a third kind of adhesive. Maybe I just have nubbly walls.
Well, wait, don't you... Did no command strip situations? Didn't you talk about this on Back to Work or what?
Well, there's a couple kinds of command strips. Well, there's I use two different kinds. It's always two command strips with me. I like the kind that are essentially what we used to call Velcro. I love those.
Yeah,
that's how I put my Eve's room. Eve. That's how I put my Eve's on the wall, as you know. And then there's also the kind that's just sticky. It's just a different kind of sticky. Right?
Yes.
I have not resorted to that because I mainly focus on those for things I know I need to remove. So like the Eve rooms that I have, I got one by the door, I got one over the desk, and they do need to be recharged. So you can hear it. Hang on, I'll give you a real effect. Ready? Yeah, listen carefully.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, so good. It's because I need to charge it sometimes. But the Nano Leafs are as close to permanent as you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
But... So I started using, Gorilla brand little squares, those clear squares. I don't know if it's going to be any better.
No.
But, like, it was so fucking frustrating because I tried the ones that came with the Nano Leaves. Then I tried 3M ones. And Dan castigated me, understandably, for dragging, as you say, the 3M company. But the problem was, like, at least the shitty 3M ones peeled off okay once they fell off the wall. So what happened is I have 17 Nano Leafs in a cool pattern. And two Tuesdays in a row, I've walked into my private office and only like four or five of them were still on the wall. One of them or several of them gave up the ghost. Maybe there's a vibration from the train and the whole thing went pear-shaped. And most of them fell on the floor, but a few of them are just hanging there looking sad. And so I've remounted everything. I started all over, new pattern, all new.
Ooh.
Using those. Now, do your stick on the wall pretty good?
Yes, to the point where I'm no longer worried about Dougie, the landlord, getting upset that I put things on the walls because I was going to rearrange them and... Because I it says like removable. I used my command strips that you're supposed to pull them off the walls, and it's fine.
And those, like, the little, the circle, the bristly circle things can like pop off. They turn, but like the adhesive was incredibly frustrating, and it was shitty enough that it fell off the wall, but strong enough that it takes me in each instance 5 minutes to get the adhesive off the back. It's like the worst of both worlds.
This is, oh God, this is absolutely wild. Because no, mine have not, I thought they were going to fall, but they haven't. And when I tried to rearrange one of them, it took off like all of the paint.
Oh no,
it's fine. I was like, you know what? Now it has happened. So I'm just going to put shit on the walls and see what goes down. And so far, everything's been fine.
Nature's healing. Wow.
I know, right? But that's what I'm curious what kind of command strips, or like, I thought they were command strips that came in the box. I know they come with too few of those little like connector dinguses. I'm like, this doesn't feel right.
Oh, I do. I bought two more packages of dinguses.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that. That is smart.
Well, you can buy. I did. I had to search around and buy it because I want it to be really solid, and I'm using more than I need to because you really only need a connector that passes off the signal to the next one. But I would also like to think that that's part of the superstructure, personally.
I don't know how they work, and I've decided not to think too hard about it, because...
It's called Follow Through, and it's a new segment on Due by Friday.
Oh, you know what? I would love to hear this follow through, because do you want them to be able to be rearranged, or do you want, like, all right, now they are this pattern, I'm going to keep them here... And if I want to remove them, I will accept that things will be ripped off the wall.
Well, if I got to choose all the things I wanted, I would want things that are totally, like, not illogical, but like incompatible, which is like, if I stick it to the wall, I want it to be there for 1,000 years unless I decide to take it off. Number two, if I do decide to take it off, I would love it if that were easy. That's the thing about a command strip that's great is you do that little pull and it unadheres, which is really cool. Doesn't leave marks. So I mean, I would do that if I could trust it. My main thing though is if they don't stay on the wall, I'm gonna lose interest, even though I'm kind of invested. But I love them so much, Alex.
Do you have the heavy duty ones?
No, I've got the shapes. I've got 17 of those.
Oh no, I meant the command strips.
Oh shit, dog. I tried to hang my Dyson on the wall. and use four of those 15-pound ones.
The fan?
No, no. My Dyson vacuum.
Oh, okay.
Because it comes with a dingus that lets you hang it on the wall. And I thought, I love the idea of hanging things on the wall. It's a very guy thing to do. But I like hooks. I like hanging.
I'm going to say go with the like heavy. Oh, do they even make these anymore? I feel like it's one of those things where with the Gorilla Glue. Gorilla Glue, the woman.
The great DC villain, Gorilla Glue.
I am Gru. The lady put it in her hair and then she couldn't wash it out. So they
lady put it in her hair.
Yeah, it didn't. Oh, God, it was a TikTok thing. A woman put Gorilla Glue in her hair.
Oh, I see.
And so now a lot of adhesives are like extra. Oh, it's like when they took the fun out of glue because too many kids were. And whiteout. Did you have that liquid whiteout when you were
of course.
A
it was
kid?
Invented by Mike Nesmith's mother, the guy from the Monkees. I love that. And you could huff it, you know, like the lady in Ferris Bueller. I have an entire, as I said to Dan on the other program, Back to Work, where I also talked about this challenge before we did this challenge, and I cut to you a little bit. I have an adhesion box. I have adhesion boxes. I store conceptually. So when I store things, I store them conceptually. I don't store them aesthetically. I store them conceptually.
I don't understand this because, and not in a, like, that sounds silly to me, in a... So when you store, do you mean like storage or like drawers?
This is just slightly out of reach. Let me see if I can.
Okay.
So there's all kinds of ways to deal with your stuff. You could think about stuff like, say, books or comic books. Like, do you store your comic books by like... I mean, there's all kinds of ways. You think about that whole field of like library science of like, you know, it's just here's my Marvel ones, here's my DC ones. Do you want them alphabetical? Do you want them chronological? Because inside each of all of those, you know, there's some kind of like, when are you going to want this? When you want it, where will you look for it? And will things related to that be nearby? Now, I don't start out by going, I wonder where things are that I have purchased from 3M. Or I don't like, so I think about, sometimes I need adhesion. So I have a box here that has all of my different command strips. Mm-hmm. It's also got my Velcro things. They don't make much of a noise. Because Velcro things are a form of adhesion. That goes in the adhesion box. Okay? I've also got tape. I've got some tape in there. And now this is a little bit of a pivot. When I get command strip hooks and I have extras, they also go in here. Because that's kind of adhesion adjacent.
What is another example of this other than
conceptual.
Adhesion? Another conceptual box or storage space.
Could be things like cleaning supplies. Now, cleaning supplies are tough because...
Because different rooms. This is where...
Different rooms, but also different sizes and weights.
Yeah.
So, like, I've got... I always keep stuff like bleach and white vinegar on hand. And they're usually in a 1 gallon, you know, like a big Heinz white vinegar 1 gallon sort of bucket. That's not going to fit into the caddy that's got stuff like Windex. So that's a little bit of a challenge. But I think the idea of, this could be a challenge, by the way, conceptual organization is keeping like with like, things that you're going to need. Okay, a good example, I guess, would be a toolbox. Like, this is the dumbest example in the world. Why do you have a toolbox? Well, because sometimes you need to do stuff with tools. And dimes to donuts, if you're using, the time that you need a screwdriver may also be the time that you need screws, that you also need a hammer, that you also need a tape measure. And so just to be the dumb guy here, it makes sense to keep all of those things in the same place. But like, for example, then a classic Merlin man, the kit that has all the stuff to reinflate your tires, like you probably don't want to store that in your attic, even though there's more room there. That should probably be in your car because that's the concept and the context for tire refilling. Do you have anything like this in your life? Do you keep like with like?
I think that in fact, I don't think I've ever thought, words this week. I've never really thought of doing anything in a different way. Like, I don't know. It seems absolutely bonkers to do it it's like not keeping all of your clothes in the same spot. I don't know. Like, it just seems weird. I think that's why I'm like, wait, what? Why? How is this different than anything?
But this also, I mean, like, it seems it's so obvious, but like, this also relates to a thing I've talked about with when I decide to like strip everything down to the rafters and really like clean an area. Well, I mean, above all, everything else, when you're cleaning out an area, you need so much more stuff for trash than you think. Like, I get those Husky, like 50 or 55 gallon, you know, like you clean up after a party at school, those kinds of, I've got those at home in the garage and here at my office. Just giant, giant, giant. You put a contractor bag in that. You should be able to throw things in the trash from several feet away without thinking about it. That's the hugest thing. When I get packages, Amazon stuff, I always start with a grocery bag next to me. Step zero is grocery bag. Step two, Gerber knife. And then everything goes straight into the recycling as quickly as possible. Because otherwise what? It's going to accumulate. So like when I do like a big conceptual cleanup, you can't really organize your stuff until you know how much of it you have. And how much of it you want to keep. So like, it may not be until you've gathered every pen that you know, holy shit, I don't need all these pens. A bunch of these pens don't work. The answer, see also, you know, chapter and verse 43 folders. The answer to that organization is not to buy a bigger bin for pens you don't use. It's to winnow down the pens that you love and then honor them by putting them somewhere good. And I think that goes for everything. Like, you don't know whether you need new socks until you've seen all the socks, really. You could just buy socks, but you're paying rent to store garbage if you have stuff in your house that's organized in a way you never utilize.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the Cox family project all this year, really. And it's going well, but this is Matchy really doesn't like to keep. I keep being like, okay, you just keep your bag right by the door. Just your yep. gun. Where else does it need to be? Just by the door. And now he does it, and it's great. And still puts his wallet and keys all over the fucking place. But AirTags,
madness.
AirTags has made my life less stressful. They can be
it's
like
so stressful. You should only things should only ever go one place. Disambiguation. Talk about mental health. But woof.
I know, but the other problem, I think the other conceptual problem is sometimes you think you need, you know, what's a good example? I don't even know.
In terms of like structure or organization?
No, like let's say you think that you're going to use your microphone and your like MIDI keyboard at the same time. Mm-hmm. And really you think you are the person who will use your microphone and your MIDI keyboard at the same time to like make a music thing. And in my case, that actually sometimes helps me because I'm like, I just have it in my brain. Like, okay, if it goes together, you are going to use these things together. But it very right. quickly, I think, unsolicited take, I think it's very easy for people to just make those conceptual areas into aspirational areas, and then you're back to rent the free garbage.
Well, yes. It's also a good example of where bottom up works so much better than top down. Again, something I talked about with Dan, but like I that's huge for me. Is like, you know, we were talking about like when you decide to do stuff with post-it notes or index cards or whatever. And my thesis was for tools like that, lightweight tools, and this does actually get straight to our challenge, was the point, is that I want to use that just long enough to take me to the next stage. I don't want to make a perfect, beautiful mind map because that's my business card, if I had one, does not say makes pretty mind maps. Like, I got to keep driving.
Good business card.
It'd be a good business card. It'd be really pretty. It would have branches. I think you're right. But the problem is top down is so satisfying. An example of top down would be like, I'm disorganized. So I buy this costly to-do list app and then spend 2 days entering in projects and contexts and dates and creating automations and doing all the things. And all that time you're doing that, to state the somewhat belabored, you're not doing your work. Like, the idea is like, you know, you should be, and if you're not doing your work, like that's not maybe going to be the best thing. But then you also have a second problem now, which is that now because you've decided to conceptualize your work rather than do it, you haven't done that inventory. You haven't collected all your socks or pens. And you're just saying, I imagine that I will do music and therefore I have this area called music in my to-do list app. No songs are getting made.
Oh God, no, I'm triggered. I can't even.
But as far as the mic and MIDI thing, I mean, I think that's what we're talking about, right? Is like, this is how I imagine I would do this.
It's like having a project called Clean.
Ideate. That's my project. I'm going to ideate. Should we do the challenge?
Did I do the challenge?
Should we do the challenge?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you clearly did do the challenge, and I think I did too. Dig Dug Challenge. Yep. This week's challenge was yours, Merlin.
And hello. It
was, explain where this came from.
This came from, I feel like the genesis of this was I was watching What Happened, Miss Simone, the documentary about, what's her name? Nina Simone. And for some reason, I just had this thought that there's like, because there's a lot of like, you know, mental stuff in that. And I had this idea I wrote in the challenge sheet, which is the name of this challenge is Harness Your Horses. And the notion is take something in your life that you or others regard as a disability, a hangup, something that's fucked about you. Maybe neurologically, emotionally, behaviorally, something about you that you or others think is fucked, and turn it from a disability. Is there a way that you could harness your horses in a way that whatever runaway bullshit is in your life could go from a disability to a superpower?
Mm-hmm.
Leveraging madness, if you like.
I hope that I didn't peanut butter on this challenge.
You could be forgiven.
Because we, well, no, okay. I, you know, have many things that I make me considered, you know, broken and that involve putting me in hospitals or various mental facilities. But I've always tried to stay away from romanticizing bipolar stuff because you get into like Van Gogh chopping off his ear real quick in that case.
Yeah.
But it's
difficult to reverse engineer. I mean, the implication is, and it's funny because I was just reading today, I wanted to get that quote right from one of my favorite poets, Robert Lowell. It's a quote that I've quoted a lot, so I wanted to get it right. And Robert Lowell, being interviewed by Robert Giroux, said, "It's terrible to think that all I've suffered and all the suffering I've caused might have arisen from the lack of a little salt in my brain."
Yeah. Holy fuck. I've never heard that.
Because he would go manic every spring. He would go totally manic. He'd leave his wife every spring. He'd cheat on his wife, and he would do stuff like show up at the symphony, like standing up and like conducting the symphony. I mean, he like really lost it.
Yeah.
But you can't reverse engineer that. You can't start that by saying, well, I need to get a little bit more crazy and then I'll be able to write, you know, life studies or something like that.
The immediate, well, and I used to do this. I would just not take my meds. And at the time, I had a really bad doctor and didn't, the meds I was on, like it wasn't helping me. So I would stop taking them. And then I would make what I considered really good, fine art, whatever the fuck, film, good music, whatever. And other people said it was good. Other people were like, yeah, oh gosh, that's awesome. And then immediately I'm like, yeah, that it's because I did not take my medication. Not because I worked really hard and thought a whole lot about this and forget the fact that for, you know, a month afterwards, I either couldn't get out of bed or would just hyperventilate and have panic attacks all the time.
You could end up paying for that for a while.
And I've been suffering from the that a lot. I hate to use the word suffer often, but
it's better than experiencing.
I mean, there are so many. Yeah. So I've been pivoting lately.
Pivot.
There are just so many things sitting in the shared iCloud folder right now that like projects that haven't been put out yet and that have like the tiniest, just a little bit work to be done, like barely any. And then I think about putting more things on the internet, and then I, you know, I don't puke in a Target, but get close. And I am like, okay, there's got to be a way for me to somehow associate feeling bad with finishing this work that is basically done. But like, I have like 15 interviews with very interesting and also very terrible VR people that I just haven't put out because who the fuck knows? But I've been trying to think of like, okay, If you are experiencing a hallucination, or if Maddie says you're being a little like hypomanic, you
being a little bit of a stinker,
just a little bit of a stinker. I mostly when he's like, all right, settle down, like when, not like the terrifying, like really bad stuff, but just in general, I talk really fast and get louder and louder and louder. And he's like, okay, you're like,
I've seen
yelling.
That. I've been there for that. I've been there for that.
Yeah, I just get really excited. So I've set up actually a focus. I know that tech doesn't solve everything. I know. But I've set up a focus and a second desktop on like my, sorry, my, now that I have a real monitor, I can just plug in my iPad and, you know, do that stuff there. And I'm really, like most people, really like the way I have a love-hate relationship with the iPad multitasking, and in its simplest forms, it does really help me because I can't focus on the voices in my head. I need to focus on these two things in front of me, and it has helped a lot, I think, in just sort of I worried that it would be the opposite. Like, if you're panicking and getting anxious about something, go work on something that makes you panicky and anxious for a different reason. And I'll talk about this with my new therapist, but for some reason it's been working. Like, two anxieties don't make a Buddha, but
two anxieties don't make a right.
Yeah, it seems to be kind of working. I don't know. How mm-hmm. about
that's the nature. Yeah. I mean, as far as what I did, but I mean, like, it's whenever my shrink is explaining how, whether or why a given medication works, he's really good at this stuff. And even though I don't understand it medically, scientifically, a lot of the time, but he can explain, like, the first time that you heard the explanation of how coronavirus works, where like it's the way that it gets into the system is really, really clever. And the right animation, I saw an animation from UCSF about this that was really satisfying. You're like, oh, I see. It fits into this area. It's expecting this other thing. And it, you know what I mean? I guess that's how diseases work in general. But when you explain that in these physical terms, or you explain how like receptors in your mind work, for somebody with my gifts, understanding things about receptors can be really fascinating. Or it's like, you know, this thing fits with that thing, but not with that thing. It lets this thing in or out, but not that thing in or out. And like, getting that right is really important. Like, we don't want you to stop having receptors that work. We just want to help have a thoughtful traffic cop that knows how to direct the traffic. And I think what we're saying here is analogous to that analogy, which is like, how do we take the things that we're dealing with and then fit it with other things in either negative or positive ways in some ways? So like, for example, like you're saying here, like, you know, maybe there's a way that like the kid's shape sorter box, you can sort of like, in this mood or this state of mind, I know it's definitely not good to do this kind of thing, but it might be okay to do that kind of thing. this certainly goes for something as like something I've talked about in the past, or like paraphrase David Allen. It's not that I should never sharpen pencils, because sometimes pencils need to be sharpened. It's just that I maybe ought not sharpen pencils, you know, if an incredibly important career making or breaking project is overdue. Mm-hmm. And but of course, if sharpening pencils helps you to do that, that's okay. But that is a kind of self-knowledge. If it's early in the morning and I'm stupid, like it's really hard for me to get the shifter into gear sometimes at 9 or 9:30 in the morning. But there are certain times of day where I know that if I am a little bit more keyed up, or I am like, if my attention's frayed, like in the afternoon, I know there's certain kinds of things that I should or should not do at those times. And if I come home frazzled too often and I'm in a shitty mood because I have not accommodated my brain, I need to do? I need to add more time at the end of the working day for a transition, for example. I know this is not the challenge per se, except that it kind of is. It's a way of saying, like, when I say harness your horses, what I mean is like a horse, like having a team of four horses that stop being a team and just run in different directions at different speeds for different reasons ain't gonna get your cart anywhere. Like the goal here is to yoke whatever it is that can move your life project forward a little bit. But then also in my case, my biggest addition this week is, like I said, I'm back to work, is trying to... So like, for example, I have ADHD. I don't know if I've ever mentioned it, but an interesting thing about having ADHD is, depending on the flavor that you've got, I don't generally have trouble getting focused on something. It's just a question of having the executive function to get focused on the right thing or the thing that I would choose. And so I've known that for a while. But like, for example, like I say, sometimes I'll just fucking give myself a day off. I'm done apologizing. Like my day off could be doing shit around the house. But, you know, Merlin 2021 is all about how blocks are fun. And I'm going to try to stop feeling bad about trying to make my life better, as we talked about on Slack a little while back. Not everything can work for everybody, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to make your life better. And one of the things I try to do to make my life better is to go like, well, how can I be super effective, as you say, at this kind of thing at this time of day? But then also then that create these affordances for being less wound up at other times. And I think that's really critical. It's always critical to understand your motivations and your sources of energy. I'm avoiding the word inspiration, but like whatever it is that gets you off the dime, that gets you to set up that mic and record, or that gets you to open up that dreaded folder of interviews or whatever it is, like learning your own personal rhythms and energy cycles can be really important. Otherwise, I mean, like when you're a kid, you know, and you're like a young person and you're still dumb, you'd like make the oddest decisions at like certain times of day. Well, you can ill afford that when you get older. And just to salt and pepper this with a little bit of pandemic, I mean, isn't this a thing that we're all learning and that we can hopefully talk about? Is that like nobody ever worked 8 hours a day at a job? I mean, maybe at Amazon, but like most people who have like a knowledge work job, which is a lot of people, you understand like sometimes errands have to be run during the day. Sometimes you have to check in and see if your kid's still sick or not. Like these are maybe dumb examples, but that whole idea of having these two unrelated lives, that's been a dead concept for me for a long time. And I hope it becomes a less live concept for other people, which is like there's going to be what your manager might think of as leaks, but you should think of as having a holistic approach to your actual life. It isn't life and work. Work is part of your life. Like, how do you make that all go together? And so you got to cut yourself some breaks. So here's my only critical addition this week. It's a thing I've been doing for a while, but I'm now kind of encouraging myself to do more vigorously, which is, let's say I'm on a tear and I'm getting stuff done and I'm cleaning up. But it's not that difficult to get into what a friend of the show, Danny O'Brien, calls yak shaving. It's not difficult to like get so wound up in power puttering or get so wound up in whatever ADHD speed run is causing you to do a certain thing. So I could sit there and do a certain thing for a pretty long time. Part of power puttering for me is I'm doing different things at different times. Like I'm soaking this thing while I'm washing that thing, and I'm trying to assimilate all of that and say like, or to integrate all of that and say like, oh, when I'm here and realize I'm out of this product, I should also see if there's other products nearby. But what I mustn't do is let that particular horse run full speed all the time without ever checking in on whether we're moving in the right direction. And so there's this phrase that I've kind of said quietly to myself for years and that I'm now saying, you know, deliberately to, again, to myself. So now what?
Oh, that's good.
And the trick here is the remembering to ask yourself, so now what? Like, you know, do I have enough information to do the next thing? Like, do I want to, okay, another example. It's really fun to make mind maps. Because when you make mind maps, you also get to do things like choose the color of the branches, the font. For, and this sounds silly, but it's true. Like, if you're in a mind map, you're probably not sure what the fuck you're doing. Nobody goes into a mind map, unless you're doing something for PowerPoint. People rarely go into that particular mode if they're feeling on top of their game. They're often going in there, I think, because they need a shape and a story to what it is that they're doing right now. And that's what something like a mind map or post-it notes or whatever provides. But then the critical part for me is like right up to the point where I feel like I've almost got it. Like at the point when I've got it, I definitely should bounce. I can always come back. But right before I know what this is, that's when to bounce. And I say to myself,
hold up. So when
so you're going to write a piece. Like you're going to write something short.
Like you know what that is, like what you are doing or what you are trying to
Yes. Okay. The example I gave Dan was trying to figure out there's enough shit going on with me rearranging my desk. And when I say my desk, I mean the whole studio setup, power cables, you know, USB cables. I'm given to believe you're familiar with all of these things.
But just
like,
a little.
So then I think about that a little bit and I'm like, oh, well, I'll just put this here and put that there. Okay, but wait a minute. The new monitor goes here, the monopod goes there. If I put my hub there, it's going to be hard to change the cables later, and I'd like to get that taken care of. I have not updated my UPS battery setup in a while. I assume everything still works, but I don't want to find that out at the last moment. If I treat each one of those dumb things as its own separate thing instead of an omnibus project, I'm going to miss shit, and I'm going to have to start over. Or I'm going to have to like, I'm going to get frustrated myself that I wasted all that time not accounting for the big picture of what I'm trying to do. So in that case, yeah, I'll sit down with index cards and I'm like, okay, there's a microphone here, there's a cable there, there's the da 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 da. And I can just move all those things around. And right, there's a point though where I go, oh, okay, I think I've got this. Like, I don't want to keep doing that until I've accounted for every cable I've ever owned. I want to satisfy to where I have harnessed that particular horse of like, okay, that's it. I fucking had it. I'm going to spend an hour fixing this goddamn desk setup. I'm going to figure out where to put this, you know, Apple wireless keyboard when I'm not podcasting. So I got a shelf for that, all these things. You know, it's okay if you don't think about, if the listener doesn't think about this like I do, but there's something really invigorating about harnessing that horse, but then also saying, so now what? Because then when you answer that, you go, oh, I have enough information and structure to do the next thing. I'm ready for my next block of uncertainty because I've gotten over the hump on the stuff that was so uncertain I didn't even want to do it. And you need those training wheels like just long enough to go to the next thing and to feel like the next thing I work on. I like that idea of a block of uncertainty. I got past this one. I'm comfortable and competent enough now to try this thing, and I might do things that are more challenging. I'll sharpen more difficult pencils or I'll move longer cables or I don't know. But that's my thing. Just remembering to say so now what, because that enables me to get my head back in the game and make sure my horse is running in the right direction.
What do you do if you can't answer the question? Well, now what?
That's a good question about a question. Well, why don't I know that? This kind of, again, goes straight back to some David Allen stuff. Like if you haven't been calling somebody that you feel guilty about not calling, trace that through the stack and say like, well, do I have their phone number? Like, you know, try to figure out if you're going to try and get this dandelion out of your yard, be prepared for difficult routes. Try and find out why that's a hang up. And this is why, in a very uncomfortable way, the best question you can often ask yourself is, have I decided already I'm never going to do this? I have no interest, desire. I have no reason to do this. So why do I feel bad about it? And that's why one reason I love task paper is like the stuff that's in task paper should not be about it should not be at high levels about like my reason for being alive What it should be is, like, if there's something in there and I feel weird or bad or dumb or undecided about it, that's an opportunity to ask myself, okay, so you put bring up toilet paper on this list. Why haven't you done that? Well, it could be because I'm not at home. It could be because I'm tired. It could be because of whatever. But if I get something on that list that just keeps staring at me and making me feel bad, then I'll say to myself, oh, who cares? Just delete it. If it comes up again later, it comes up again later. And I think we all have elements of that freedom to what we're doing. But a to-do list in particular is not a place to accumulate bad feelings unless that helps you. That is a place for stuff I know I could go do right now that I've decided is important. If you redecide that it's not important, you take it off the list. And in terms of what you're asking, though, the block of uncertainty part of this is, like, in a certain ideal world, it would be neat if we could all be pushing ourselves just a little bit into areas that are uncomfortable, uncertain, ambiguous, scary. But to get to that, you're not ready to really jump off the cliff yet. But these little bits, maybe sharpening pencils, will give you enough sense of completion to move to the next thing. But I think you do develop a somewhat intuitive sense of when you have enough information or enough structure or whatever it is. If you can't answer the question, so what next? Take a pause. You might want to work on something different for a minute. You might want to go outside and drink a glass of water and all that dumb stuff. But it always is beneficial to ask yourself, not simply like, why am I doing this? Like, what's the consequence of me not doing this? What's the consequence of me not doing this now? But like, what does he rather be doing? If you're not bringing up toilet paper or rearranging your cables, like, what would you rather be doing? What's your fucking problem? You know, maybe you need to go, you know, have sex with a robot or something. But there's something in your mind that's like you're a little bit hung up on. And I think when you figure that out, like, don't blame the paper for what's on it. It's just a medium. But I don't know. Everybody's going to be different with this stuff. But I think catching myself and saying, so now what, is a very affirmative, assertive, and vigorous way to say, to keep in mind what it is that I'm trying to accomplish here. And like to hopefully be fitting those pieces together in a way that's satisfying and productive.
Ding, ding.
Horse ding. Harnessed.